welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 213, and I'm your host, Jonathan Metz. With me this week, Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy.
James Jones.
You're awfully excited today, Johnny.
I'm feigning. And
perfect.
In the fourth chair this week is Michael Cole. His friends on the internet call him TYP.
Why?
And we have to explain that John Lindemann is not here this week, and unfortunately he's not going to be here for the next 2 or 3 weeks. I forget exactly what he said. He is in the middle of being uprooted and moving across the country, and so he's very, very busy with that right now. But John will be back.
I can't think of an offensive place to say he's moving to. I'm a little upset with myself.
All right, so this episode, we've got some new business for you. And after the break, we're going to talk about the big 3DS announcement out of Japan. We'll give you some analysis. We'll leave most of the details to the newscast, because that's what they do. But I know you want to hear what we think about it, and we want to hear what you think about it as well. We've actually got a couple of emails that sort of address that. So yeah, after the 3DS talk, we'll get into some listener mail. And then at the end, I'll announce the retroactive poll results, if you don't already know.
Sweet.
And we'll talk about everything else that's going on. So, first up, new business. Mike, you're the guest.
So, I haven't been playing too much. I mean, I'm not going to talk about Metroid Other M, because that's been done to death. But I have been playing Euphoria, the NES Virtual Console game of the quarter. And it's, I feel like I'm enjoying it in spite of its controls. It's a really interesting level design, but it feels kind of slow and sluggish, especially if you're playing as one of the other characters. You start off with one character who's reasonable paced, but there are other characters that you can switch among, and those guys move a lot slower. They can only walk.
They end up feeling like, even though you can change to them anytime you want, it ends up feeling like you kind of only want to do that in special situations, because they're not nearly as agile as the main guy.
Right. So there are a couple of complaints about the controls. One, you have to push down to stomp on guys, and it took me forever to figure that out. Like, I literally got my first boss, which is actually one of your alternate characters, without knowing you could stomp to hurt enemies.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So yeah, I had to do crazy platforming, avoiding enemies that are walking side to side. So that tweaked me off a little bit. I actually had to read the instruction booklet to figure that out. Let's see, what else? There's a lot of pushing start and going to things. You have to push start to switch your character. You got to push start and then click a menu item if you want to look at the map.
Mm.
So it just feels like a cumbersome interface.
You know what that made me think of? Is the N64 Zelda games.
Yeah, actually.
The Water Temple, or the, what is it, the Stone Temple in Majora's Mask, where you have to create all those statues by changing masks and playing the same song over and over.
Yes.
That was infuriating. Yeah, the interface is definitely awkward.
Yeah, but the level design is actually very clever. I've gotten pretty far into the game. I've at the point where I have only to collect these three keys that are left, and you can open up the door supposedly, but they're often like the corners of the world, and the world's more of a Metroid-like map, so there's a lot of backtracking, and you respawn at the same location every time, but it's sort of centrally located.
More than you think at first.
Yeah, exactly.
Early in the game, it can feel like you know, every time you die, it feels like you really have to go a long way to get back to where you were. And then a lot of shortcuts open up as you get more powers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the power-up system is actually really good. There's a lot of really clever stuff. And, I mean, it's not a big world. It's not a huge game, but it's pretty tight. I think it works pretty well. But yeah, the controls really bother me. The music, it sounds kind of dissonant, and I'm thinking, maybe is it because it's the PAL version, maybe?
There's some of that, yeah.
Because I was listening to a NSF file, and it sounded a lot less dissonant. But it's a bizarre game, so I wasn't sure if that was intentional. I mean, I think Johnny touched on this when he mentioned this game, but it is a bizarre game. I mean, at the beginning, you're walking to the right, and then you climb up what looks like a rope. And then you go to the next screen. It turns out it's like spit, like drool hanging down from a guy, like some block with a mouth. And you've been climbing up drool. Like, there's weird stuff in this. And apparently the birds, in the version that was localized here in Europe and released in America, the birds drop like weights. But apparently in the Japanese version, they drop shit. And
on your head.
Yeah.
My day-to-day life.
It's a bizarre game, but it looks really nice. It's a very good-looking NES game.
Yeah, I think the animations are so funny, and they're really impressive, especially for such an old game.
Yeah, like everyone has this sort of bug-eyed look, which I wasn't aware that you can pull that off on an NES. Like, it actually looks... It's kind of like everyone has like a lazy eye or something, but it's very subtle. It's kind of one of those things. At first, they look normal. You look closely, and it's like everyone just sort of slightly looking outwardly like... I can't remember the name of that actor, the guy who played Igor in Young Frankenstein.
I've got nothing.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Johnny's the one on the movie podcast.
Yeah, come on, Johnny.
Yeah, no, I'm actually not that big of a Mel Brooks fan. But
Johnny has failed us.
All right, well, anyway, I'm definitely enjoying that. I recommend it. I don't remember if it was $5 or $6. May have had an import fee.
It's six, yeah.
$6. It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. And it's not even out in Japan yet, I don't think, on Virtual Console.
No, it isn't. It's part of like a whole series in Japan of Hebereke games.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't really think there's any like games that are that similar to Euphoria. They're just like all completely random, like this Hebereke Papoon, which is a puzzle game, and it's really quite random.
Okay, I guess I'll talk about one other thing I've been playing, or sort of playing, Dark Void Zero. Now, they were saying, wait a second, TYP, you bought a DSi? No, I didn't. what happened was I was poking around the iTunes store, and I'm like, well, I'll try an iTunes iPod Touch game. I really haven't done one before. And I was poking around and saw Capcom had a few games on sale that weekend for $1. I'm like, okay, I'll buy it. So I had the misfortune of purchasing Dark Void Zero for the iPod Touch / iPhone. I want my dollar back. it just doesn't, the controls just do not work. I mean,
is this like an on-screen D-pad?
It's on-screen D-pad type thing and on-screen buttons, and it just does not work.
Perfect.
You're blocking your own view of the bottom left and bottom right corners holding the darn game. And it works, the D-pad works okay. The way it works, it's sort of like, it's whatever direction you're relatively pointing to. So you don't, if you're off of the D-pad but above the D-pad, it'll still go up. So it's not super finicky, but it's really hard to be precise. And same for the jump and fire.
And that's a hard game, too.
It is.
I played it on John's DSi back at PAX. And
yeah.
That game ain't no joke.
No.
I wouldn't want to have to deal with crappy controls on it.
Oh, God. It was terrible.
Tough.
I mean, you know, I grew up holding down B and tapping A with the whatever bottom of my thumb, and you can't do anything like that on this sort of a controller or touchscreen. And so... You know, you'll jump instead of firing or fire instead of jumping, and it just doesn't work. It's just not precise enough. And you can tell it doesn't work because they added a god mode that you can access from the beginning. It's just a menu option.
And that's not a good
sign. The future
sign.
Of gaming,
yeah,
people.
I revisited it today. I'm like, you know what? I played so little of this game because I kept dying. I'm going to turn on god mode and see if I can at least figure out what this game's about.
It's like, so basically the future is Metroid games start with all of our parts. All of them.
I cannot see why anyone wants to use this platform as a primary game system. I mean, you hear news reports like, oh yeah, people are just moving over and using their iPod Touches and iPhones. And maybe for things that only rely on tilting or maybe like card games or something, but an old school game like this, no way.
Well, and a lot of people also refuse to actually spend money on those. I have a friend who's a very heavy iPhone user. I mean, he's like an acolyte of the iPhone. He's had I think every model of the iPhone.
Yeah.
And he will not spend money on games or apps. He will only get the free version. If there's not a free version, he's not interested. Because I'll hear about these iPhone games that sound really interesting to me, and I'll tell him about it. He's like, no. Does it cost money? No.
but he's willing to buy a new iPhone.
It's just a principle, you know. And I think maybe most people aren't quite that strict about it, but a lot of people just basically, if there's a free version, and there usually is, they'll play that forever and never actually spend money on it.
Well, yep. I know there are good exclusive games on the iPod Touch / iPhone platform, but this certainly does not make me want to go out and try them. Very sour experience here.
I think that Dark Void Zero, of course, it debuted on DSiWare, and that's probably the best place to play it if you can. But I'm pretty sure you can get it on Steam for like $5 as well. And playing it with a keyboard isn't great, but if you have like a joypad you can use on your computer, that might be a good way to do it. Maybe I should do that. Otherwise, I have to wait until the 3DS. But we'll save that for later.
Oh, the thing is that this isn't the only game, though. It's like Mega Man 2 is available on the iPod Touch and iPhone.
Street Fighter 4.
They have freaking Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
I'm throwing 2. Up in my mouth.
I cannot imagine playing Sonic 2 with these sorts of controls.
I want to try it.
If it weren't, Johnny already kind of complains about Sonic being a little slippery and hard to control. But with your hands blocking the bottom of the screen, the playable
area.
At
least Sonic, you only need one button to play it. It's a D-pad and one button.
Yes.
I mean, Mega Man 2 is very much a two-button game. And that is... Oh, that's such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Okay, well, James, what you been reviewing, dog?
Yeah, so I finished off Nuts and Bolts, which is long, as I said.
Yeah.
And I have then moved on to my first review copy in a while, which would be Sid Meier's Pirates for Wii.
You are a pirate!
Yes, which is a port of a 2004 PC game that I've probably had since about 2005.
Did you ever play it on PC?
Yeah, extensively. So why I liked this game on the PC is that it's a game you can just kind of jump into, play for a little while, jump out, or it can absorb a ton of hours and not really be mentally taxing. There's a lot of stuff in this game, so I'll try to boil it down pretty quickly. Basically, you are a pirate. You get on a boat, and you attack other boats that you may choose to take or just loot. You sail between various ports, and your relationship with the ruling class of that port is influenced by your piracy actions. And you're trying to hunt out lost treasure and kidnapped members of your family across the Spanish Main.
James, I love that every other gaming podcast is totally wrapped up in Civilization V talk right now.
Yes.
And you're talking about Sid Meier's other game.
Yes.
Pirates. So, is this a simulation like Civ?
No.
Is it an action game?
Oh, God, no. So, on the PC, it was an action game. It was played almost entirely with the number pad. I'm serious. So your ship controls, as you sailed, 4 and 6 on the number pad turned the ship, and then 8 and 2 raised and lowered sails.
So, the ship's with the new Wii Number Pad Plus accessory?
No, so...
ColecoVision, baby!
Could we get an overlay?
It thankfully, uses the D-pad for ship controls, which is the only thing it gets right about mapping the controls to the Wii Remote, because it otherwise fails horribly. Like, a lot of the mini-games in there, so like when you raid a ship, you'll engage in a sword fight with the captain of the ship you are raiding. And either you have to survive long enough for your pirates to eliminate the other people on the ship or beat them off of their ship. And in the game you have 3 types of attack and 3 types of dodge, and they're mapped to keypad buttons on the number pad. On the Wii Remote, the dodges are mapped to A, B, and A plus B, which is marginally acceptable. However, the different kinds of slashes and stabs are mapped to swing right, swing left, and thrust, which, as you know, without a Wii Motion Plus, doesn't work. So sword fighting is always swing sideways, unless sometimes it detects you swung sideways and then accidentally jerked forward a little bit. Then it stops mid-swing to change swings, and you lose your advantage and get hit. Yes! Love Waggle. Other mini-games like, there was a semi-rhythm-based dancing game you used in ports to try to charm women. That's also been mapped to Waggle and is unfathomably confusing. It went from being very simple to being a pain in the butt.
I'm sorry, what's the appeal of this game in general, regardless of the controls?
In general, it's just kind of a fun game that's relatively undemanding. So, I mean, you get to go from place to place and just sink ships, steal stuff, and hunt treasure. I mean, it's not like it's a great game, but it's fun enough for what it is.
So is this a pretty direct port, content-wise?
Content-wise, it is almost a direct port.
From a 6-year-old game.
Yes. Nice. They removed what was the on-foot stuff, which was, in the PC game, you could land your ship along the coast and get out and search for stuff on foot. Or you could raid cities on foot, which had this really kind of crappy strategy game, like turn-based strategy that came up. So now you can't get out of your ship. You're stuck on it. But instead of getting out on foot to find treasure, you have to scan it with your periscope using the pointer, which doesn't work right. And then just slam into it with your boat. So besides that, it's a direct port brought to us by 2K China. So you know they put their A team on this. It's still got a lot of the simple fun of the game, but the waggle really takes out
I'm sorry,
stuff
James,
that's not
James, I don't hear
around.
What the simple fun is of this game. It sounds completely boring to me.
Well, I mean, maybe it is boring to you. It's not a game that's going to be for everybody. But, I mean, I just kind of enjoyed the fact that, you know, I set a course and I just go. And if I encounter something that looks appetizing in terms of stealing it, that's what I go do.
So it's kind of like Wind Waker.
That's what I was thinking. Just play Wind Waker.
Well, except that you can get around, you travel a lot farther and a lot faster than Wind Waker.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you can do. Or you can engage the story mode, which has you hunting down this evil baron, because this is a Sid Meier story. It's not going to be great. And he who has kidnapped your family, and then hunting down his lackey, who is currently holding them hostage. But so you, as you sail around, you get hints as to where they are, and you're trying to catch them. But because they're constantly moving, a lot of times you just luck into them out in the middle of the ocean. Which is kind of a troubling scenario, because you're almost certainly not ready to go after them. But, you know, it's just kind of fun to go around and basically engage in horrible acts of piracy that, under normal circumstances, would have had you hanged.
A lot of people like pirates, I guess.
Yeah, like I said, the Wii version has that, but the horrible waggle kind of makes all the minigames feel broken, which is sad, because there's enough buttons on the Wii remote, they didn't need to do that.
All right, so James, what else you got this week?
So, I signed up to beta the Xbox Experience, which is basically just adds a bunch of ads for Kinect. There's like three of them now.
So the new experience is adding advertisements to your menu?
There's a lot more to it than that.
There is, but I mean, the first thing you get is the, here's what Kinect can do for you video.
That sounds eerily familiar.
Yeah, it does. One of the things it adds is what they spent forever talking about at Microsoft's press conference, which is the integration with ESPN3, which used to be ESPN360 until they renamed it earlier this year, which allows you to stream both live and on-demand games that they have a lot of available on their service. Now, for you to be able to do it, your ISP has to be a subscriber to ESPN3.
Most of them are.
Right. So every game that ESPN has on the family of networks, as they call it, will be up there. Also, they have a lot of local games that they've signed agreements with. So like Raycom Sports, who does some SEC games and some ACC games, is up there.
Jefferson Pilot?
Oh, God, the Jeff Pilot game.
That's what I grew up with.
That, me too. They were horrible.
they run all the like mid-tier SEC games that don't get picked up by a major network.
Raycom has replaced them, and it is no better.
Oh, it's the same. Okay.
But there is some blackouts if you happen to be in a region broadcasting it. But it's
right.
So last night when it came in at like 2 in the morning when I was supposed to be going to bed, I'm like, well, let's just give it a shot and see what this guy's got. And I watched the first quarter of the Boston College Virginia Tech game from last week. It came through pretty nicely. I turned on the Thursday night game, which is going on right now, just to see how it looked live. There's some buffering that takes place, some pixelization, but it's an HD, it looks good, and I don't have HD cable, and this might have removed the one reason I really wanted it, mm-hmm. because for sporting events,
pretty much the only reason I wanted, you know, that I missed cable TV. Because, with Hulu and Netflix, as far as, like, original content programming, you can see almost anything. Especially if you can stand to wait until it comes out on DVD. But yeah. Live sports are, like, the one thing, you know?
Yeah, the Netflix Instant, obviously, is still on the 360. They're right next to each other. It's
and lovely. They've improved that. I think they're adding a search feature.
You can now search Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised you couldn't do that before. And I think they upped the offerings of the Zune channel to have more videos and stuff in there.
So speaking of Netflix really quick, I actually got a Netflix disc in the mail this week. And you know how they sometimes will put ads on the inside of the envelope? So the ad on the inside of the envelope for this time at least is actually not only advertising that you can watch Netflix Instant on your Wii, but it's like a whole guide of how to set up your Wii, how to connect your Wii to the internet and what it can do. So it even shows a couple of like Mario games that you can download over Virtual Console.
Weird.
Wow, that's interesting.
It's the first time I can think of where I've seen Nintendo of America actually marketing Wii as an internet device.
Well, Netflix has run a lot of radio spots since they launched the Wii discs, basically saying, you can now watch Netflix on your Wii. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd ever heard them mention other consoles in a similar...
Well, this would be a paid advertisement from Nintendo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you see ads for all kinds of stuff inside those envelopes, but I was surprised that this one was from Nintendo and that it, you know, and that it actually went into some of the other online features of the Wii that most people aren't using because they don't know they exist.
Yes. Well, if they only watch Nintendo Channel, they'd know.
Well, they don't know that Nintendo Channel is one of the things on the ad.
Don't tell people that exists. They will never come back.
Scare them away. So, Greg, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I have been burning through Chrono Trigger New Game Plus at an alarming rate. I've over-leveled my characters that are ready to defeat the extra super secret boss thing.
It goes faster when you kill all the bosses in one hit, doesn't it?
It wasn't quite that crazy, but it got to that point pretty quickly. Because the great thing is because the combat devolves on New Game Plus to kind of completely thoughtless, I could just whack up the speed of it even higher.
Mm-hmm.
So it is so quick to play through.
Oh, yeah.
And you could just enjoy the music and the pretty graphics and the level your characters up to obscene levels and then start piling up those endings, like I said. So that's gone a lot quicker than I thought, but I just didn't want to take it out of the DS, basically. In other words, the last puzzles of Picross 3D are really quite hard.
Maybe I'll go back to Picross at some point. I'm kind of glad that I broke that curse. So, I feel like putting it back in the system might be playing with fire a little too much, but I haven't been traveling by plane lately, so...
I'm not going to say I'm a model of restraint, considering I've piled up more than 350 solved puzzles.
Jeez.
At this point, which is almost all of them, I'm very close.
Yeah.
But what I have been playing in a show of defiance is a show of great courage in the face of being ribbed with gleeful schadenfreude from my so-called compatriots who are so glad at the thought that I'll miss out on this treasure stuff on XBLA. I decided to maximise what I could of Treasure's back catalogue by going to the Japanese PSN and downloading Silhouette Mirage. This was originally a Saturn game by Treasure.
Well, you showed us, Greg.
No, I did. Don't mess with me, all right?
No, really did. I mean, he really did, because Silhouette Mirage was brought to America back in the PS1 days by Vic Ireland over at Working Designs, and they fucked it up bad when they brought it over.
This is a really interesting story. I mean, obviously, I was completely removed from all this stuff, being an N64 exclusive gamer, and I didn't really start playing Treasure games till the original Sin and Punishment. But looking back on it, it's really quite fascinating. So it was a Saturn game that was ported over to the PlayStation, as a number of Saturn 2D games were. This one is meant to be a pretty decent port. Obviously, Saturn was generally better for 2D games, and some of them...
Because it was a 2D system.
Yeah, well, and it had quadrilateral polygons or whatever. But, but it got ported over and sort of survived mostly intact, whereas some were kind of butchered. I've seen comparison screenshots stuff. There definitely some little extra layers in the background and stuff that have been taken out for the PS1 version. But aesthetically, it reminds me quite a lot of, not Mischief Makers itself, but if you've seen like the Japanese box art for Mischief Makers or some of the character portraits and stuff like that, it looks very similar. But of course, for the in-game graphics in Mischief Makers, it's that god-awful plastic pre-rendered look.
Shake, shake.
In terms of the character design, it's kind of similar, but in terms of how it looks, it's you know, it's a nice, clean pixel art look, which is really, really, looks really nice on a PS3 through the HDMI and everything. And it does, I suppose, of all the Treasure games I've played, I mean, it is still pretty unique, actually, but it's probably most similar to Mischief Makers, because it is slower paced. You still end up kind of picking up enemies at quite a few points in the game to beat them up for money. And money is very important in this game for leveling up your weapons and buying some health packs, because you've got a finite number of continues to finish the game. So it's kind of similar to shaking the enemies for gems or whatever in Mischief Makers. But the thing about it is it kind of foreshadows Ikaruga a little bit, because it's all about switching colours. You play this Shiner character that's blue and red, So if you're facing one direction on the screen, you'll be blue, and if you face the other, you'll be red. And the enemies are red and blue, they have attacks that are red and blue, and you know, if something of the same colour hits you, it won't hurt you. But it will kind of drain your magic meter that powers your attacks, which is called spirit. Or if something of the opposite colour hits you, it'll hurt you, and then you can reflect back attacks of the same colour, which can, in some cases, the only way to defeat enemies. They're not vulnerable to your normal kind of attacks. You can actually switch which side is which, but you won't want to do that very often because it takes a long time and it costs a lot of your magic. So most of the time, the way you switch is literally by which way the character is facing. I think the one problem that I have with it is sometimes it does get a bit bogged down. Because of that, you know, you kind of, you can feel a bit fiddly when you're just dealing with a lot of enemies, like kind of like you get into a bit of like brawler style crowd control, you know, where you can like grab an enemy, throw it to one side, and then get everyone on that same side and deal with them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you that sort of thing. And as I said, it is imperative to some extent, at least to the extent I've played the game so far, to, as where possible, where sort of prudent, to get hold of those enemies and shake them down for currency. I mean, maybe if I was better at the game and didn't need to buy so many health packs, then that wouldn't be such an urgent thing, I suppose. So maybe that becomes less of an issue as it goes on. And that kind of bogs down the pacing a little bit. But, of course, the highlight of the game is, say it with me...
Boss battles.
The boss battles, yes. They are really good, and that's where the dynamics of your orientation and these little puzzle kind of things start to come into play. For instance, this one encounter where there's a giant bowl of soup that's being cooked, and these enemies are coming along throwing red ingredients into it, but they're blue enemies, so it's your job to sort of intercept the red stuff, throw the blue enemies in, and then once the soup turns blue and the boss drinks it, it kills him. it's loads of totally wacky treasure stuff, you know, the spectacular kind of, this will be sort of having a sword fight in a city, and then all the lights suddenly come on this skyscraper, and the people just start throwing crap at you because you're making too much noise and things like that. But the thing about what Working Designs did is they actually made this problem, as from what I've read, obviously I haven't played both versions, this problem of the gameplay getting a bit bogged down even worse, because they made it so that if you used your weapons at any time, that actually automatically drained your magic meter. And so what you had to do was farm enemies to refill it so that your attack still did considerable damage, which to me sounds like exactly the wrong prescription for this game. Because, I mean, maybe it's just coming from a sort of more classic kind of treasure fan's perspective that's used to it being really, you know, quick, punchy, punchy kind of action. But that's definitely not what I like. I imagine it would make the game harder as well.
I think that's actually the reason they did it, is they felt, Working Designs, they had brought over a few different treasure games, as well as a lot of RPGs for PlayStation. And I think they felt that their hardcore, you know, sort of import type fan base wanted these games to be really hard, and maybe that's why they did it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it sounds like...
I think that's not even the only thing they changed. I think they actually screwed up some of the timing, maybe, and I've heard like lists of things that they screwed up when they brought it
really
to the US.
Well, I mean, yeah. It's one thing to sort of change sort of tunings, if you like, to make something harder, but that's a really kind of fundamental game mechanic change there.
Well, I'm jealous that you're playing Silhouette Mirage, actually. I would love to try it sometime, and... I don't know, I might get a chance. There's a new service on the US PlayStation Network that is releasing Japanese PS1 games. And there's only two right now. One of them is the original. It's not the original, but it's the first Choaniki for PlayStation.
Yes, digitized graphics of legend.
Right. Yes. And it's only like $6, which is kind of tempting just for sure comedy value, but I'll leave that to John. And
that's John's job. Don't go working his side of the street.
Exactly. So I'll await his judgment on it. And the other is some other shooter that doesn't sound all that interesting.
I did know. Is it Gaia Seed?
Yeah, maybe.
It'd be interesting, of course, because you know, there is an American version of it. And yet, I mean, there's American versions of all sorts of games that are on the Japanese PlayStation Network that aren't on the American PlayStation Network.
Right,
and the Japanese theaters are really brimming with games compared to America.
Right.
But it could be an interesting angle just to say, well, look, this is the version you didn't get.
Right.
You know, originally. It wouldn't be like Chouiniki, which no one in the West got, perhaps mercifully. But still, I would like to see that happen. For people who are not willing to pay premium for PSN Network points, like I am, to secure these things.
All right. Well, on to a different treasure game, actually. I've been playing Sin and Punishment 2, or Star Successor.
Yay.
Yeah, I finally got around to it. I've been looking forward to playing it for a while, and I have enjoyed it quite a bit. I don't think I could ever enjoy it as much as you do, Greg.
I hope not.
Very few people do enjoy it as much as you do, I'm sure.
Exactly. It's the one thing that makes me special.
Yeah, it's not my kind of game as much as it is for you, but I certainly do appreciate it and I have had a good time with it. I have to admit, I've been playing on easy.
That's fine.
Don't feel bad. That's what I did, Johnny.
I didn't even try normal. After everything I'd heard, I was like, okay, I'll play through easy and then I'll try normal. And I still might do that if I can just, I'm at the final boss on easy. And I mean,
it's hard.
It's the final boss. It's really hard. So I haven't had time to go and try it a few more times, but I think I'll eventually get past him and then, I'll try at least a couple levels on normal and, you know, kind of, I want to see how it compares and if there's anything motivating me to want to play the whole game that way and then maybe even try hard.
I mean, there's one thing I wanted to bring up here. I kind of alluded to it back when it came out as an unlockable thing, and it's been plenty of months now, so I may as well get on with it. Mm-hmm. There's a mode that you get for beating the game with both characters, and the mode is called Isa and Kachi mode, where you actually have both characters and you kind of swap them out, like, you know, Marvel versus Capcom team style. And this actually makes the game considerably easier because you have two health bars.
Oh, really?
If okay. one of the characters dies, that's it, it's game over.
Oh, so you have to swap out the last minute.
Yeah, if you get down low, swap to the other one. But the thing about it is it does make the game easier. And I think it's possible. If you were to complete, I'm not certain of this because I didn't know this unlockable existed when I first played the Japanese version nearly a year ago. But I think it's possible to complete it on easy with both characters and then play it on normal in the Isa and Kachi mode.
Oh, yeah.
That's presuming I would want to play through the game at least three times.
Yeah, this is the issue. And this is what I was coming to, because I think Isa Kachi should have been available from the start.
Sure.
Because first of all, it is like kind of like a difficulty select of a different type.
Mm-hmm.
So if kind of want to see the bosses with the sort of full attack patterns, or, you know, there's not that many that have more attack patterns, but there are some, and things like that, but just want it a little easier, this is another way to go about it. But also, I think it really enhances the score attack aspect of the game, because it's far more likely that you can survive for long periods, and also it brings in some strategy to it, because of course they have different abilities. One has the sort of multi-target charge up lock on, mm-hmm. and then the other one has the single area of effect charge up move,
right.
And so at different times you're like, what is gonna net me a bigger result here? Or just if you're in the middle of a boss battle, you know, which is the better to use, things like that. Or, you know, the timer that controls when you can charge up again, those are independent, so you can actually hit a charge move with one character, then swap in the other one for another charge move, and you have a concentrated, devastating sort of volley, which, again, very interesting in boss battles. So these elements are things that a lot of people are just not going to see in the game.
Yeah, I had no idea this was there.
I think it's incredibly sad that they lock this behind having to complete it twice with the two different characters who don't really play that differently. And I think they're far more interesting when you actually juxtapose them rather than when you just play through all of it with one and all of it with the other.
Yeah, I mean, I played the game with Isa, and then I basically played a little bit with Kachi and said, all right, I'm done.
Right. Yeah, that's what I did.
I didn't realize there was any payoff there to go back and finish it off.
Well, and I don't know why you necessarily would, but as I say, I think it's just silly. What's the point in hiding it? I mean, at least you could have had it unlockable after one playthrough.
I mean, it does raise the question of what is Kachi doing while Issa is being thoroughly thrashed by a giant monster with frightening heads.
Well, if you're playing two-player mode, then that would explain it. But yeah, otherwise, she's just kind of hanging around, or whichever one you don't choose is just kind of hanging back and shows up at the cutscenes.
Hey, I'm back.
A lot of video games do that, though.
Yeah.
So, John, and I have to ask. I mean, I play the Japanese version. Greg played the Japanese version. I really don't know what the English localization is like. Is it cringeworthy or is it tolerable?
Well, it's not that much different than playing the original Sin and Punishment, which, of course, had English voice acting.
Yeah.
So the story makes no more sense than the first one, certainly, which didn't even come out in America. But yeah, I mean, the story is completely bonkers. And the voice acting, I actually think, is a lot more tolerable in the second game. But the writing is so anime that, you know, it's still pretty annoying, but at least the actual quality of the voice, they're a lot less shrieky and, you know, a lot less cry shouting or whatever they call it in anime. So
yeah, I would say the story would be even bad by anime standards. I mean, it's just chaos. I mean, there's
I hope
just,
so for anime's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, to try to quantify the story is hard because there kind of isn't one. It's just things happen.
It's entirely skippable, though. I mean,
it's a stew of ideas that don't mesh well together.
A stew is one word.
Goulash.
Gumbo.
That's a gumbo.
The story is, I mean, it's so weird and silly that it's almost kind of funny. But it's, you know, whatever.
But you don't have anyone saying, please continue.
No, unfortunately, it's not in this one. It is a hard-ass game. I mean, even on easy, some of these bosses, I've gotten frustrated. You know, had to try three or four times before I could get through it. And that's fine. I don't mind doing that. But it's like, dude, I'm on easy.
I mean, well, I found that some of the levels themselves to be kind of tricky in terms of twitchy and the like that lava level, I seem to recall dying quite a few times before I got to the end. I think it's one of the later levels, but there's just a lot of places where whatever enemies come out of nowhere or lava comes out of nowhere and hurts you or there are posts just sort of that you got to dodge. And just there's a lot of tricky stuff there that even on easy mode, it's going to hurt you.
There are some areas also where it basically turns into almost bullet hell, where it's just there's stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well.
And I think that's the biggest difference between Sin and Punishment and Star Fox, which is, you know, it's clearly inspired by in some way. And I do think this is the closest thing we have to a Star Fox game on the Wii. But it's the bullet hell part of it is the main difference. I mean, Star Fox always feels manageable. It's even trying to tell story while you play the game. And I can't imagine that in Sin and Punishment because
no.
How could you slice off a part of your attention to actually, you know, listen to these characters talk to each other while all this crazy stuff is going on?
No, I mean, especially with this one, though, the characters are so kind of maneuverable that it doesn't compare with, you know, an R-Wing has to feel like a spacecraft, you know, it's not that perfectly agile. And then, therefore, if it's not, then the things that you're given to dodge have to be sort of balanced with that.
Right. There's actual physics in play versus a hover backpack.
Yeah, you're just magically crisscrossing everywhere all over the screen all the time.
Yes. Especially if you adopt the cheap strategy I do, which is just dodge, 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 dodge.
Yeah, that could get you in trouble sometimes, though.
It can. It can also make your finger fall off.
I have gotten sore fingers from, especially my trigger finger, just from holding the button so much.
I did complete a level basically dodging the entire level, and my finger was, the finger I used hit the dodge button was completely just wrecked.
Yeah, I seem to recall doing that during that forest level. A lot of dodging.
But yeah, it is a really cool game. You know, I'm renting it, which I think is, for me, is probably the best thing. I'm kind of glad that I didn't buy it, because it's a game that I'm going to play through once, maybe twice, and then I'll be done with it. And that's pretty much how I did with the first Sin and Punishment. You know, I do own a copy of that somewhere, but it was a gift. And it's just the game doesn't have that much longevity for me, because I'm not interested in replaying it over and over for high scores. But I do think it's a great experience, and I don't know how well it did. I mean, I think my online ranking on easy mode is like in the 300s, and I'm certainly not that good at the game, so that makes me a little concerned about how well it sold in the U.S. But, you know, maybe most people just didn't bother to submit their online ranking.
I never submitted my rankings.
Or maybe most people that did it on the higher difficulties because they're, you know, hardcore people.
Because they care.
And if you're the kind of person who buys Sin and Punishment, you know, probably are pretty hardcore too. It is a really cool game, though. I do like it quite a bit. I think it was a good choice for like a summer release on the Wii. I mean, it's not going to be certainly not a system seller. It's not going to be able to compete against a bigger budget title on some other system or whatever. But it's the kind of thing that, you know, on a hot summer day when you don't want to go out and sweat your balls off, it's the kind of thing where you could burn a few hours and really enjoy it. And it's a special, it feels like a boutique game, you know, like it's a game that's made for a small number of people, but those people are really, really, really going to like it a lot. And speaking of that, actually, maybe you could classify Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions the same way. I talked about this a little last week. This is the DS game. Yeah, I know that was a little bit of a forced segue, but...
Yes, it was a forced segue.
I've completed the game now. I'm done with it. And I just wanted to give some final thoughts because I really, really, really like this game a lot. Neil gave it... an okay review. I think he gave it like a 7 or something. He wasn't all that thrilled with it. And I definitely like it a lot more than him. And I'm not surprised. I mean, I love the predecessor, which was the Web of Shadows DS game. It's from the same developer. It's mostly the same game design. It's just better in every way. It's really, they've taken out a lot of the things that were a little bit frustrating about Web of Shadows. And really, they've upped the technology a little bit. It feels faster and smoother, and it looks a little bit prettier. And the game world, I think, is bigger this time. It's certainly still a short game. I probably completed it 100% in about 5 hours, wow. I would guess. So I don't know if that's worth your $30 or whatever they charge for new DS games these days, but I do think it's great. I mean, it's really, really fun. And in their defense, I don't know if there's much reason to go back and play it on a higher difficulty level. I'm not really compelled to do so. But there are some little challenges that kind of unlock as you do certain things in the game. And they're totally optional, but they remind me of those sort of virtual reality missions in Bionic Commando Rearmed. Mm-hmm. Because they're self-contained levels, they're timed, you have to basically... In general, you have to do something or get to the end of the room within a certain amount of time using only a certain ability, like maybe using only web swing or only wall crawling or whatever. And the level design on these is nasty. I mean, this shit is hard. I mean, I destroyed the story mode. You know, even the final boss really wasn't that difficult at all. And then I went into these challenges and I was like, wow. I mean, it really is like Bionic Commando in that it is really, really, really hard. So that's a nice bonus for people who like the game and who, you know, kind of blow through it pretty quickly. I don't know that there's much incentive for completing those, but it is new content. It's more stuff to do, and the levels are unique. So it feels like basically it actually does extend the gameplay a little bit. And it makes use of the very, very good mechanics, the controls and the way that Spider-Man moves around the environment. Those challenge levels make really good use of that, and they really put you to the test in a way that the story mode kind of can't. Because it, you know, it has to be more accessible over multiple difficulty levels and everything. But the game's really great. I mean, if you like sort of exploration-based action games on the DS, I'd put this up there with just about any of them.
Well, I mean, I had Web of Shadows, and I liked that quite a lot. I suppose one of the biggest things I had with it, one of the issues, was just that, you know, there was definitely, it was short, and they, at times perhaps they were feeling that a bit, and they had quite a few sort of kill rooms and, you know, these combat padding scenarios that, to me, when like Zero Mission is your paragon of game design, are a little icky, you know, they slow things down. Yes. A bit. I mean, is that present again, more or less?
Well, first off, let me say that in Web of Shadows, I found the kill rooms tolerable because the combat was really good and really fun.
I would agree with that. I mean, the fact the combat for that sort of game is, I'd be hard pressed to give you a better, more satisfying example. So right. I did tolerate them certainly, but I didn't.
Right.
Yeah, I could have done with fewer, let's say.
Sure, I agree with that point. And it was, you know, Henry Hatsworth had the same problem in the the combat in Shattered is a lot more tedious. But the good news is, for you, Greg, especially, in Shattered Dimensions, the only time you have to do a kill room is when it's basically given as a test for you to absorb a power from a different dimension. And that only happens maybe 5 times in the whole game.
Well, that'd certainly be less then.
It's much less often than before. And some of those are even optional. Some of those upgrades that you can get by passing abilities through the dimensional conduits or whatever they call are even basically part of sort of trying to get 100%. So I think probably the required number is like 3, you know. And they're still, I mean, they're like 2 minutes long, maybe. And the other good news is the combat's even better in Shattered Dimensions. I'm so impressed by the combat system in this game. I think the 3D, you know, the console Spider-Man games could learn a lot from the pacing and the tightness and the strategy that goes into the combat in these DS Spider-Man games. Because it really, I don't know if it feels super Spider-Man to me, you know. I don't know if it's the ultimate encapsulation of how Spider-Man fights, but I think it does pretty well at that, and also it's just fun. It never really feels tedious, but yeah, the good thing is most of the enemies in the game, you can try to go around them. There are some enemies that will try to shoot you out of the sky if you're just swinging overhead, you're trying to avoid them. There are sometimes enemies that will just aim up and shoot you down. And in that case, you might want to snap his gun out of his hand with a web line or else defeat him, and then you can go and get by the rest of them as you were before.
And as you said last week as well, there isn't the incentive anymore, sort of a grind for these points that you could spend on new moves anymore. It doesn't do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So yeah, the combat is much less of a chore in this game, and I think it plays even better than before anyway. So sometimes you'll want to kill the enemies just because you feel like it. So it's a really nice game. I mean, certainly it's not for everyone, as you can tell from Neil's review. He wasn't that thrilled about it. So for someone like me, it's great. Probably one of my favorite DS games, you know, replacing Web of Shadows, which I was really in love with too.
It says that someone needs to give Neil the memo that what Johnny says goes. and this is from no lesser authority than Sergeant Foster from the Marines, so he knows about the chain of command.
The game doesn't use the touchscreen at all, except for this one minigame that you have to do every time you move between dimensions. And the mini game is, there's this tablet on the touchscreen, and you have to spin it until this meter fills up at the top. And while it's spinning, all these enemies come in that you have to tap on to kill. And when I first started playing the game, I found it to be really frustrating and annoying, because I thought you had to continue. I thought basically if you weren't spinning the stylus on the screen, like Uendon style, Elite Beat Agent style, then you weren't making progress. And it's very hard to do that when the enemies start coming in faster and faster, because you have to stop spinning, go kill them, and then go back and try to spin again before more come. And that is frustrating. And eventually what I realized is that basically you can just kind of give it a spin, and then it'll go on its own for quite a while before you have to go back and do it again. So really the main thing is just focus on the enemies, and then you don't have to go back and spin it again until you see that it's slowing down or it stops. And once I found that out...
That's science right there.
Yeah.
That's the science of tablet spinning.
Still very curious shoehorning in of touchscreen stuff. They did it in the Web of Shadows with the debt when you die and you could kind of like revive yourself and refill your health. They had a similar sort of touch-driven minigame that I just thought was baffling why it was there.
Right. That's gone, by the way, but...
Yeah, well, I certainly wouldn't want
both. If you like touchscreen games, I have just the port for you, Johnny.
Yeah, anyway, the little touchscreen minigame, it is annoying. Even, you know, once I figured that out, I was able to do it a lot more easily, but it's still pointless. It doesn't need to be in the game. It's just kind of lame. But anytime you're using the buttons in the D-pad, which is 95% of the game, it's really, really, really good. I like it a lot. So now we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got all your 3DS analysis and listener mail. Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com. Okay, well, even though John is out this week, Now Playing rolls on, and we have a tidal wave of 3DS news from Nintendo's conference earlier this week. New stories about everything from release information to game announcements are available on the site, largely thanks to James and Carly.
Mostly to Carly. We do have some non-3DS information on the site today. Pedro has a review of Wii Party, which is Nintendo's first party game. I can't write that any better.
You just brought that on yourself.
He says it's, quote, not the most groundbreaking party game on Wii, but what it lacks in innovation, it makes up for with great execution. Check out his review to find out more.
Neil has more party game information in his interview with Hudson's Yukihiro Kobayashi, producer of Oops Prank Party. We get to find out what separates Oops Prank Party from Wii Party and the lineage of Hudson's new title, Party.
Oops, this is like one big prank, this.
The interview actually has an interesting commentary on how on Mario Party games and Wii Party, which is very Japanese in that I used to work with people who made this game, so it's a lot of fun, even though it's my direct competitor.
Lastly, we have a series of impressions from Disney's Epic Mickey. Oh boy, I can't do Mickey, damn it. DJ Hero 2, JZM. Is that from John? I hope it is.
No, that was Carl, actually. Man. Carl flew out to a junket to play some DJ Hero 2.
All right.
Yeah. Watched a lot of journalists get real drunk.
That was shocking.
Yeah, I know. Go figure.
The expose.
Depravity. Good God. Be ashamed of yourselves over there.
then we have this thing called Inazuma 11 Strikers.
Yes.
Which is, I've heard, a football game.
Soccer.
That's right. Football game.
Yes. But those are TGS impressions, by the way. The last one.
All right. It's been a big week on the site. Definitely do not miss out on all this original content from TGS and the big 3DS event. Okay, well, we're back, and as you may have heard, there was a big 3DS event in the past week. We were watching it and covering it and blogging about it and chatting about it and writing articles about it. I'm kind of sick of it already. This was the long-awaited September 29th thing in Japan where Nintendo basically announced the Japan release date and price for 3DS, which is going to be February 26th in Japan and March everywhere else, including Australia.
2011. Thank you.
James is right again. It's the end of the world.
That's right.
So, James, you predicted that it would be in Japan 2011?
Yes.
Okay, I don't even recall that.
That was right after E3, and I'm like, these games don't look ready.
And
man,
they don't.
You're one of the few people, because most people were calling 2010 at least for Japan.
Well, and I think the more pressing thing that's come out of this is that clearly Nintendo must have been under that impression, because
exactly.
They slashed their expected earnings for this fiscal year by more than a third after they published this decision and directly cited the decision to release the 3DS in all territories at the very tail end of the fiscal year as one of the factors in that, alongside with declining Wii and DS hardware sales.
And the yen exchange rate.
Yeah, which is their favorite punching bag.
Well, it is... real. I mean, it is a real effect on their bottom line.
It is real, it is significant, but the fact is that the 3DS decision was also listed as one of the key reasons why they had to tell their investors, you know, all that money we said we were going to make for you, well, actually it's kind of less than two-thirds of that.
Well, and let's quickly discuss why the stated reason, which was that the reason they put it to 2011 was to avoid shortages.
The production issues.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that they specifically said shortages. It may just be that some of the components they couldn't get until then.
One of Iwata's quotes basically was that we would not have enough to meet demand.
Well, we know they've made at least like 50 of them because they had those at E3.
Yeah, so. But those weren't production models either, obviously.
Right, right.
Yeah, they didn't have the gray slide pad.
Yeah, it's so different now.
Yeah.
It's probably changed a little on the inside.
Probably.
So we haven't mentioned the price yet. In Japan, the price is 25,000 yen, which is approximately equivalent to $300.
Freakishly close to $300, actually.
Yeah.
It's like what is it, like a dollar and
it's like $2.98 in change.
It's amazingly close. It's just yes. On a freak coincidence.
Right. And the problem is a lot of people that are hearing the $300 figure are freaking out saying that's way too expensive for a handheld. And while yes, it is like $100 more than the DS came out at 150 in America, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, 150 and 15,000 yen.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's not $300 in Japan. It's Nijugoman yen. So
yes.
It's there's a difference. And for them, that is expensive, but it's not $300 expensive. They're not going to be releasing it for $300 in America. There's no way.
Yeah, that's the thing. It might be natural to think that because of the exchange rate situation, the American revenues are worth less to Japan, that they might put the price up. And certainly it is an upward pressure, but they still can't ignore the market conditions of America. If anything, in fact, I think, looking at this price in Japan, which is very high, it's the same price as the Wii was when it launched in Japan, for instance.
Without a game. The Wii didn't even have Wii Sports in Japan.
No.
It didn't, 25,000 yen.
I mean, my feeling is, in fact, while you might see it as an upward pressure in price, in America, as we've discussed in recent episodes, and Europe, you know, portable gaming isn't what it is in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the console market, which is very competitive. For them to go and put a really console level price, and in fact, with all the price cuts that we've had in the console, it's going to be going, you know, if it was $300, it'd be going above a lot of SKUs of the consoles, is just really not possible. And in fact, that reason may be why the price is as high as it is in Japan, because they can get away with it in Japan and their money isn't going to get stolen by the exchange rate. So, unfortunately, the Japanese bearing the cost, perhaps, of the conditions being a bit less favorable everywhere else.
To say that I'm concerned about the bang, 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 bang release strategy they've got going for this is an understatement.
Well, Pachter, it said today he thinks it's bullshit. He says there's no way they can actually honor this.
Oh, all right, so Pachter said it, so it's obviously happening.
Yeah, there we go.
So he thinks that it's going to be delayed outside Japan till April or May or something like that.
So in other words, that they would actually have contradicted this most recent press conference and their most solemn sort of promise that it would come out in the major markets in this fiscal year.
Right.
And they are projecting that they're going to sell in the first month of the system being on sale, which is pretty much what's left of the fiscal year after February, 4 million units, which isn't going to come from Japan alone, however popular.
Oh, well, maybe.
So, I mean, they are obligated to deliver on this, because otherwise they're going to have to go back to their investors and say, you know, when we cut the earnings by a third, well, now we're cutting them again.
Right.
It sounds like a terrible feat to accomplish, but they're under pressure to do it at this point.
Yeah. The issue for me, rather, is that we know there's going to be shortages. Nobody's going to come on this and give the "there's a million of them" quote, because that person would be roundly laughed at.
We've learned our lesson, I think.
There are a million of them.
Everybody said that Johnny learned his lesson because I reserved a Wii. But Nintendo probably learned the same lesson. They could have charged $300 for the Wii, and it still would have sold out for a long time.
Yeah, I believe that I would be amazed if it was under $250 in America, but then I would be kind of surprised if it were over. I mean, that is looking like the price at this point.
Well, see, here's what's also interesting to go with that, is that there is a quote in the Japanese edition of Bloomberg yesterday, which would put it at the 29th, attributed to Iwata, where he basically said that part of the reason to price the 3DS at 300 yen is, or three, excuse me, $300 in yen, so 25,000, is based on the, quote, amazing response it got at E3.
Yeah, the buzz was that strong that it influenced their pricing. So, and, you know, Reggie himself said something sort of similar during E3 or just afterwards. You know,
yes.
They were gauging the reaction and that would go into the decision. So I don't know what sort of interesting moral dilemma this will pose for games journalists in the future as to whether they wish to save their readership money by acting all disinterested and when they show off
the Wii 2, we're going to be like, man, what is this shit?
So here's the corollary that I can draw from that, though. I wouldn't be surprised to see them put a premium price on it and basically do a price drop as soon as there's slack in the market.
It's so much easier to go down, start high, if anything, and work your way down.
So cut it by $50 before Christmas season?
Pretty much as soon as it starts to be available.
But as we discussed before, the only problem with that is that there's a certain ball that has to get rolling to get it to that kind of phenomenon fever pitch, the kind of lightning in the bottle kind of stuff, that perhaps does it ever get going if you start too high.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget that the 3DS is very difficult to market because you can't show the 3D effect on TV or anything like that, or magazine ads. So they need to get it in people's hands so they can get the word of mouth.
I think that comes with store demos, though. I mean, that's not necessarily a price thing.
You're not going to get word of mouth through
store
demos.
Let's not overstate the importance of store demos.
No,
here.
But I mean, they obviously are going to have to set those up at the store.
Oh, of course, but it's a limited amount. I mean, in the end.
But I mean, there's going to be a limited number of these things in circulation for a while anyway.
Yeah.
Even if they gave them away for free, there's going to be a limited number of them out there, at least until they have their supply issues sorted out.
It's almost if they want to put posters up or something about to promote it, they almost have to have the posters be 3D TVs or something that this technology in them, and they're small little posters that they post on the side of bus stops or something.
Well, I mean, there are monitors that have the same effect as the 3DS. They could use those if they wanted to.
Let's move on here. In terms of game announcements, we got a few surprises. Mega Man Legends 3 is in development for 3DS. It sounds like it's probably a long ways off. I don't think this is going to be a launch window game. But
they had basically just started it, essentially.
Kind of a gift to the fans. I mean, Mega Man Legends, not a major seller or anything, but it's kind of this cult classic series from PlayStation 1. So the last game in the series was more than 10 years ago.
Was it Legends 2 came out at the same time as the PS2 or something? So yeah, it's pretty much exactly.
There was a spin-off too. I'm not sure where that falls in that.
The Misadventures of Tronbon.
Yeah.
I think that was actually between.
Yeah, I can't remember when it came out. I actually rather like these games, so I'm happy.
I like the first one. I actually bought the second. I own a copy of the second one that I've never played more than a few minutes. It's just, at this point, it's so hard to go back to PS1 games.
Oh, yeah.
Mega Man Legends, I mean, it was released on N64 with a fairly crappy port called Mega Man 64.
I was going to say, maybe they'll bring this on a virtual console to promote it.
That is so far-fetched in so many ways.
If that was the first time you played a Mega Man Legends game, it wasn't so bad, the port. I mean, you got used to it. Mm-hmm. But when I went and played 2 with the PS2 controller, with the PlayStation DualShock controller, with that layout, it made a lot more sense. I mean, he still turns like a tank, which obviously they're going to have to fix.
It's really weird. I mean, so Mega Man Legends is a 3D Mega Man, except it's like an RPG kind of, and you're...
It's like an RPG action game.
Yeah. It's a really, really strange game.
There's a little bit of almost some Dead Rising stuff in there, because you mix weapons and stuff that you find and buy to find make other weapons and things that you can use.
I always thought it looked like Tomb Raider, like a Japanese Tomb Raider.
A little bit, yeah.
Maybe a lot of things looked like Tomb Raider on PS1, but...
with more action.
Yeah, there's more shooting, for sure.
And collection of gems. So, you can build a vacuum out of parts to collect gems for you. So you just walk around holding down the vacuum button and they all just come flying to you.
Right.
Which is a great benefit as opposed to having to Banjo-Kazooie it and walk to each one.
Well, it is certainly interesting. It's kind of like hearing about Beyond Good and Evil 2. It's like, really? Okay, thanks.
Except Beyond Good and Evil 2 we heard about almost 3 years ago and it's still...
Well, to me, a lot of the announcements are kind of like that. I mean, Super Monkey Ball is kind of predictable, I guess. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, especially since there's motion control in the unit.
Yeah.
We're not too far removed from step and roll.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Super Monkey Ball when it was on GameCube, but I've just sort of lost total interest in the series. I think it's just been so overdone.
You know, if they told me that Negoshi was directing it, you know, instead of Yakuza with zombies or whatever he's doing now, I might actually care. But it's pretty clear that for the past several years, they've been shoving off Monkey Ball games onto other teams and just people without a whole lot of creative drive and without much quality control. And that's why the whole franchise has really gone downhill.
Now, the other...
downhill, get it?
Yeah, like Mercenaries, Resident Evil, or Biohazard Mercenaries, excuse me. That was another one I was kind of like, what?
Yeah, I mean, that's got a whiff of a real, you know, kind of quickie repurposing kind of...
GameCube
to get something
mode.
Out of, by launch window. You know, you're taking bits and pieces of RE4 and 5, putting it into that Mercenaries kind of mini-game, reduced, stripped-down form that you had.
It's so weird.
And just putting it out there as a game while the sort of real Resident Evil Revelations game is going to keep on cooking in the background.
Right. I mean, it could be cool. It could be a fun game, but I don't, it's still weird. When Capcom basically said, we have two games we're going to announce very soon, we all knew that meant on the 29th.
Mm-hmm. No one would have predicted Mega Man Legends 3 and another Biohazard game.
Yeah, those two would have been like, if you gave me 100,000 guesses to get to those two, I would have not gotten either of them. I'd have been like, I would have been on like Mega Man 47, just assuming they had skipped some before I got to those.
Well, so Puzzle Bobble 3D, that doesn't need to exist. And James, I'm sure you're interested in Tales of the Abyss being ported from, what, PS2?
PS2, yes.
Yeah.
And apparently they're doing significant upgrades and things to the game.
Well, look forward to hearing that on RFN about a year from now.
Well, no, you won't hear anything because they've basically stopped bringing Tails games over.
Well, they might give it another try with the new platform. It's quite
Maybe.
Possible.
I mean, they've effectively shut down the conduit for the time being.
I heard as well today that there's going to be Ace Combat on 3DS.
Ooh. That would make your eyes burn, though. I mean, that would be...
I see your 2-pixel enemies for the win.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's already hard to kind of make out the fact that you've got somebody 7 kilometers away you're trying to shoot down. On a screen that small, it could be impossible.
But you got depth perception now.
It's
true. I mean, of course, we've known about a number of other third-party 3DS games since E3, or at least, demos that seem likely to become 3DS games. We found out about the Metal Gear Solid thing is going to be an actual port of Snake Eater.
Yeah.
There have been a number of other kind of smaller games that have been announced. I think there's some Mahjong and...
well, it wouldn't be a Japanese console release on a Mahjong
right.
title.
EA announced that My Garden thing or whatever it's called.
Which is creepy.
TGS, yeah.
That's so creepy.
So... there have been things here and there, nothing super exciting, I think, new until this event where you got some third-party stuff. The really interesting thing to me is Nintendo didn't talk shit about their first-party 3DS titles.
They talked very succinctly about Ocarina of Time.
What did they say about it?
That it exists and that it's progressing. I mean, we got some screenshots.
Yeah, I mean, you got new media, but I mean, that's the thing. I mean, really,
right.
Not only did they not announce anything new, I mean, yeah, there was, I guess, some clarification. It's completely definite. You know, the Paper Mario is like a completely original game.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's exciting.
It involves, like, they showed like some sort of like sticker mechanic where you put a different sticker on Paper Mario, which is like a costume, and then he does different attacks with it, using kind of the lower screen to kind of outfit him and things like that. So we got little sort of hints of things, but the key thing is you didn't really have like any big titles new announced, and secondly, they didn't nail down what's coming out at launch.
Yeah.
So the issue is they didn't really talk games a whole lot anyway, if that makes sense. Like they talked about them a little bit, but it was really seemed like they wanted to bring in third parties on this guy and be like, look, see, you can sell third-party games on Nintendo platforms. I mean, they also, there's a whole section of the presentation devoted to that.
Yeah, it was very interesting that Iwata sort of brings out the graphs and everything and says, well, actually, you know, this is looking at the other platforms that they currently have, Wii and DS, you know, this is not where we want it to be in terms of third parties having a kind of healthy share of the platform. So, you know, they're talking about that specifically. And I suppose, I mean, certainly this has been raised, I think, by the EEDAR, that they think the delay into 2011, if you want to call it that, is going to help third parties, actually, you know, because they would have received the kits a lot later and a lot of their games wouldn't have been as far along as Nintendo's. And so there's going to be more of them now at launch than there would have been had Nintendo gone in 2010 as they, you know, seemingly intended, at least in Japan.
Well, I think there'll be more Nintendo games at launch than there would have been if they hadn't delayed it.
Well, that's probably true.
I mean,
as well,
the only real possibility that there's that Ocarina of Time and Star Fox 64 both aren't there is that they decide to hold one before and not release it while the other.
Yeah, I mean,
out.
Perhaps if they had launched earlier, we would have had both of them because that's what was ready to go.
Right.
Can I say, without being burned at the stake, that I'm so uninterested in Ocarina of Time for 3DS?
I am too.
And I've seen the demo with my own eyes, yeah. And it's like, it looks like an N64 game with 3D added.
It does look a bit better now than what we saw at E3, but they would have to add significant content for me to be interested.
Yeah, I'm not spending $30 on that game. I didn't even spend $10 on Virtual Console.
The one thing I would say about Star Fox, at least it'll have over the Virtual Console version, is the save feature and everything. You know, and it'd be kind of cool if they could do like online leaderboards or something for the scores. Mm-hmm. And you know, at least they can add like a certain amount to that I can kind of see, obviously, you know, because of course with N64 Virtual Console games, you don't have the suspend state.
Right.
So you can't use that as a pseudo save, and so it still has the problem the original N64 cut does. If you want to play through it, you have to sit there and, you know, play through the whole damn thing.
Yeah, you can just close the lid.
They assumed that every N64 game would have saves in them when they made the Virtual Console, neglecting the fact that they themselves neglected that.
Well, I feel so cynical about these N64 ports because we already went through that when the DS came out, and I just don't. 3D alone is not enough to make me want to go through all that again.
I'm shocked this isn't part of some Virtual Console thing. I mean, they're already.
Well,
I understand they want to do it virtual handheld, and
it may be, Mike. I mean, that's the thing. They haven't said much about the Virtual Console aspect of this thing, and you know, that was one of the next things I wanted to bring up is this virtual handheld. So we do have Game Boy and Game Boy Color games, maybe GBA games down the road. That's yet to be seen, but so we will finally have handheld, a virtual handheld. But there's some kind of implication also of classic games being on there as well, and we don't know if that's in a virtual console thing as it is on Wii, or if those are going to be released on cards or what.
Well, it's definitely was in the presentation. The idea of classic games updated for 3D was packaged into the digital part of the presentation.
Right. It was the flow was we have a quote handheld, and then he put in quotes virtual console.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's not a console. So implying that it will be exclusively the domain of handheld titles. And then he immediately put a conjunction on there and said, we also have classic games remade for 3D.
Buy them again.
Implying that they'll both be downloadable titles, but they're different platforms within their download structure.
Yeah, the idea of certainly, I think, pricing will distinguish these.
Right,
sure. I mean, you talked about there being more effort involved in updating something for 3D, so the price is going to be higher.
Now, if I could make one point, just to go back about the N64 parts, specifically the Star Fox port, what we saw at E3 had received a much more significant upgrade in appearance to what we saw of Ocarina of Time at E3.
Really? I've played Star Fox 64 a whole bunch, and I didn't think it looked that much different.
It looked like they were using new art assets.
Well, I think the water texture, because it was that first level, and I think the water texture was better, but that's about...
Yeah, some of the architecture looked, I don't know if it was better, it just looked different, if that makes sense.
Well, unless they're going to add 10 new levels, I'm not paying $30 for Star Fox 64.
I do think they intend to add new content to these games. I think that was implied a couple times, but it's not been explicitly stated.
Is it any different from the 30 extra stars in Super Mario 64 DS?
No, because there was already enough stars in Super Mario 64.
Well, that's the thing. Like with Ocarina, I know, you know, I mean, they talked about streamlining the water temple for, you know, the interface for switching items and stuff. Mm-hmm. But that game doesn't need more content. They don't need to add an extra dungeon to Ocarina.
Well, actually, that's what you see in the screenshots is what we've really had is media. But in some cases, you can actually infer things from the media. And what you've got is the lower screen has got these sort of touch buttons to switch the inventory items. So the point is you could equip the hover boots or the iron boots without pressing start because it's just there on the lower screen.
That's great. Again, it's not worth the premium of me buying it on a card or whatever.
What is interesting about it, though, is that it basically means there's there's very little HUD on the game itself.
Yeah, that's cool. I like the idea of the top screen is just going to be completely the game.
Right, and the HUD is down
Chrono
there.
Sure, Chrono Trigger did that for DS.
Yeah, exactly. I really like that.
So the virtual handheld thing is really exciting. I mean, we were all hoping for that. I don't know if Greg was predicting it.
Yep.
I was hoping for it. I didn't have
that much
faith.
I think we all concluded it wasn't coming to the DSi when it wasn't announced.
Yeah, that they were holding it over for the 3DS. You know, they said that at the beginning of the year, so it's proven to be.
And of course, 3DS will have 3DS wear as well. We don't have any details on that yet. You can imagine
games. Actually, we do have a little bit of breaking news, which is that the Sexy Clock series has been announced for 3DS, which is a mainstay of the PSP in Japan, which is attractive women scantily clad holding clocks.
In 3D.
So it is probably that is 3DS wear, I hope. Wow. I hope to God that is 3DS wear and not a retail release.
Well, the other very good news is that you will be able to purchase and download DSiWare on the 3DS, and you'll be able to transfer most of your purchases from a previous DSi system to your new 3DS. And I know that's making guys like Neil and Zach very, very happy right
now.
Most.
Yeah. My guess is that comes down to permission from the publisher, because there may be certain publishers who think, we'd prefer for you to repurchase it and give us more money or something. But for the most part, you know.
It could be something to do with, like, maybe that game uses some particular feature of the DSi that's slightly different in the 3DS, and they can't make it interface directly.
I'm certainly thrilled about the DSiWare transfer. Not the transfer, because I don't have a DSi, and I will never own a DSi, especially now. I'm thrilled that I'll be able to download DSi games on the 3DS, because there certainly are a number of them that I want to catch up on. Like Dark Void Zero.
Yeah, a playable version of Dark Void Zero. How much do you guys think they're going to charge for Game Boy and Game Boy Color games? You think they're going to charge 500 for black and white Game Boy? 500 points?
I think the NES pricing structure for both is probably what you're looking at. I wouldn't be surprised if Game Boy and Game Boy Color games end up as the same price. I mean, we all agree here that the GBA is going to happen, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if that goes into the SNES price range.
Yeah, I think GBA will come. Those games will be more expensive, but, you know, that'll be nice.
Now, remember, the prime of the GBA really wasn't nearly as long as the prime of the Game Boy was, though. So.
No, right. No. There's and there's just so much stuff on the Game Boy that has never been re-released. Whereas there's most of the stuff on GBA you can...
is re-released.
They were SNES games. Yeah.
Right. And a lot of them are still easily available. I mean, you can still go to GameStop and buy GBA games. You can't really say that for Game Boy and Game Boy Color.
No. You have to go to a more specialty outlet to get those now.
Yes. And they're expensive and they're rare and they've been out of print for 20 years.
And the batteries have all died, yes.
Yeah, I mean, we've said, for instance, Metroid 2 is probably one of the easier black and white Game Boy games to get because it was a player's choice, it was reissued, but it's still hard to find in some cases. So, and there's a lot more games that are just really difficult to get a hold of, and I think that's going to be awesome for Game Boy. I'm really excited about that. Well, moving on, a lot of the wireless stuff I found to be very interesting, and some of it seems to be geared more for Japan, but I think things like Street Pass is the tag mode. I do think that with the enhancements that they're making and the fact that they're moving it away from being tied to specific games, you know, because really on DS you've got Nintendogs, Dragon Quest IX, and now Pokemon Black and White.
Yeah,
that's pretty much the tag mode. And the thing is, in all of these games, well, less so in Pokemon, but certainly in Nintendogs and Dragon Quest, you have to go to a specific part of the game and put it in that mode and then put it to sleep and hope that someone else has gone through exactly the same sequence of steps
of alchemy
to do it. It's just not that reasonable. And the way that they're doing it more with Pokemon is that you just have to be playing the game, period, with Black and White. You don't have to go to a special mode. You don't have to put it in... you know, go into that specific feature. It's just always on. And if you're playing Pokemon and someone nearby is also playing Pokemon, you're cool. And it's even better with 3DS because it works no matter what game you have in the system, even if you don't have a game in the system.
And if the system isn't on, because it's always kind of on. It doesn't have to be in sleep mode.
Yeah, I think basically for 3DS, off is sleep. And if you want to turn off the wireless, like if you're going to be on a plane, you actually have to go to the home menu and specifically turn off wireless. Otherwise, it's always looking.
It's like the Wii. It's
Wii Connect 24 style.
Yeah, it's scary to bring up Wii Connect 24 because the similarities are obvious, but Wii Connect 24 has been such a failure. so useless, so underutilized. It's a really cool idea for a feature, and Nintendo just never showed any
interest. I mean, it's not that it didn't fail. The people who
there's just nothing on it. There's nothing wrong with the system, but I imagine the architecture for using that thing must be a mess because
I'm sure
nobody uses it.
I think it uses the internal mailing system, basically.
Yeah, which is terrible.
It's like you're sending like a game would send an email to the email client that's running on the coprocessor. And that's how it passes messages across processes.
Yeah. I mean, I think with 3DS, they found a much more practical, open-ended way to do it. And the really cool thing is basically, you know, if you've played a game on your system and you have a save file for it on the system, then it knows to be looking for data for that game.
Right.
So it could be a game that you bought at launch, maybe 3 years later, you happen to be walking around, maybe you travel to a new city, and you happen to walk by somebody who also had that game at one point, and you swap data for this game, and maybe you open up your system and it says, hey, we got new data for whatever, that might actually make you go and grab the cartridge and put it back in the system and go play that game again. I mean, that's really cool. That's a really cool idea. And I just think because it's always on and because it's sort of agnostic to whatever software you've got in at the time, this might actually work outside of Japan. The likelihood that you will pass within range of someone who has a 3DS, that's a pretty low barrier of entry.
Who has a 3DS and your game.
And has played your game at one point.
But it's really one of your games.
Right,
you know, right.
Any of your games.
Because if you build up, you think of all the DS games all of us have played at one point or another.
I know, yeah.
Over time, with 3DS, it's going to add up, and so it becomes more and more likely that you'll cross paths with someone who has played one of your games.
One of your games that supports the functionality.
And of course, some of the goes beyond games because you've got the whole thing with the Miis on 3DS now, whereby basically you will, if you've got a Mii on your 3DS and you pass someone who's got their Mii, they sort of go into this kind of Mii Plaza or whatever, a bit like, you know, what happened on Wii.
Yeah, like the parade.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's something they could have tried to push as I know Nintendo are not very good about standardizing these things, you know, the way Microsoft might be or whatever, but it does seem like they're going to push it a lot to have some Street Pass sort of functionality, but even like Street Fighter. Have you heard the one about that?
Yeah, I saw the trailer, which was really cool.
You have these like statues of the characters.
They're bottle cap guys, like in Resident Evil 4, you know, the bottle caps that you collect.
Yes.
Yeah, they like that. In the Street Pass mode, your figure of Ken will fight someone else's figure of Ryu in a sort of theoretical battle that will just happen when you cross each other, and you will get like accrue rewards from that. It's kind of gimmicky in a way, but it's kind of cute as well.
Yeah, and you can imagine where that kind of feature goes once you take it into the realm of RPGs. You know, like Pokemon. Now your Pokemon can battle even if you're playing a different game. Even if you're reading a book or listening to a podcast, your Pokemon can battle other people, and you don't even have to be watching it.
Right. I mean, there are options in play here that they could really explore if they want to, or they could just cop out and not do anything.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, because it's built on the system level, it's kind of up to game developers what they want to do with it.
Assuming that the interface is flexible enough for them to do what they want to do.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, because this is at a system level, it is basically already standardized. It's not ad hoc like Wii Speak and shit like that, where it's kind of, oh, we thought of this 3 years after we made the system, so...
Well, and friend codes are ad hoc.
Absolutely, friend codes are ad hoc. Friend codes were made after the DS was released, and that
And then they used that same architecture for the Wii, even though they could have reinvented it, just because they felt it was a good idea.
Yeah, for Wii, friend codes are ad hoc by design.
No, I mean, the point is Nintendo's not going to demand that developers use this, you know,
They're not going to pull all games
but
must have live
the
functionality.
The fact that it is there from day one, and, you know, Nintendo's pushing it, that you know it's going to be an Animal Crossing, you know, obviously the next Pokemon, you know, see what they're already doing with Black and White is going to be a huge part. It's going to probably become, especially in Japan, sort of part of the 3DS brand identity.
A national obsession is what I see it becoming.
It could be. I think a lot of developers are going to want to get in on that.
It's basically a physical social network.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's combining Facebook with Foursquare and video games. I mean, that's some scary shit if you think about it. And it's especially good for Japan. But again, because it's always on, I think it's actually, I mean, it's less so, but still practical for Europe.
You're getting into
America.
The realms of some kind of viability now.
Right.
The other thing is asynchronous Wi-Fi features are pretty much what I expected. They haven't talked about the shop yet, but...
Well, they have talked about... The one thing they've said about the shop is basically a sort of, you know, mea culpa on the fact that their current shops are shite.
Oh, did they say that? I didn't...
You know, Iwata explicitly said that, you know, this really... You know, we can't say we've done the best job possible with the shops we have. They need to be more accessible. They need to combine the functions of, you know, selling you the games and promoting the games at the same time in the same channel, rather than having, you know, the Wii Shop channel and the Nintendo channel, for instance, as separate entities.
One of which didn't even exist when that
console
was
launched.
It took
a long time to come along. And, you know, the interface has just got to be better. It's got to be faster, smoother, easier to use. So... Mm-hmm. I mean, they're talking a good game. We'll see.
Yeah, we haven't actually seen it, though.
Yeah.
That's good to hear, though. And yeah, the interesting thing about the Wi-Fi is that, as we expected, your 3DS can be set so that it will automatically access available Wi-Fi hotspots and start to download things automatically. So, again, you can kind of have this thing sitting in your backpack. You go to McDonald's. It finds a hotspot there, and it starts downloading things. And the next time when you're home, even if you don't have Wi-Fi at home, you open it up, and you've got all these new goodies. So this is great because, again, it deals with the aspect that not everybody has broadband, not everybody has Wi-Fi, but everybody encounters it at some point in their routine.
Honestly, I don't know how well that's going to really work in practically, because a lot of free hotspots have some sort of authentication or whatever agreement to terms.
Yes.
And I don't think that that's going to be able... They're not going to be able to do that automatically. I mean...
No, but...
Shit, look at my iPod Touch!
I know. In Japan, I think they're talking about this in terms of they're trying to get through some of those hurdles into certain kinds of hotspots that it will be able to do that with.
Yeah, they're setting up deals, and they're setting up more Nintendo Wi-Fi hotspots, which are pretty common in Japan.
Fine in Japan.
The ones on the train network. There's a lot on the train network in Japan.
In America, they're mainly in GameStops, but...
Yeah, that's one of the things that's going to be a bit of a different challenge in the other markets.
Right. But I mean, the authentication stuff, even at E3, like, you had to click and say, yes, this computer needs to be online, even though I did it every time I launched it up. So this thing might not even work at the industry trade show where they would show it off.
Well, it will if you go near Nintendo's booth. But I mean, the thing is, look, you guys are making an accurate point, but as in Japan, in Europe and North America, Nintendo will make deals with places like McDonald's, which they've already done with DS, even in McDonald's. You can access their hotspots through DS for free and basically cutting a lot of the red tape. They're going to continue to do some of that stuff, but beyond that, even just the Wi-Fi that you have access to, like at home, at work, the places where you know the password and you can put it in, and then your DS will remember that password, and then it will download things even when you're not specifically trying to do it. And I think that's the point. You know, what it means is I can go to work, I get the password, I put it in my 3DS, and then it remembers that forever. So then I can take my 3DS to work with me. I'm not going to play it at work, but I can take it with me to work, and it will be downloading stuff while I'm there. And then later on, you know, I open it up when I'm at Starbucks, and I don't feel like paying them for Wi-Fi, but I've still downloaded all this stuff. That's what I'm saying.
And now you've got the Nintendo Week downloaded for the next 3 weeks.
You know, thinking about all this, I almost worry that I'm going to get overwhelmed with things that are downloaded. Like, if I don't play my DS for a month and then I open it up, I'm going to have like a shitload of spam saying, look what
I'm
downloaded.
I'm sure you can opt out of a lot of this stuff. Like, you can say, don't share my Mii. I don't want to see other people's Miis. I don't want these gameplay videos. I don't want game demos, you know.
I am a hermit.
And, you know, maybe you can say, I've played enough Nintendogs. I don't want people's Nintendogs to visit me anymore. I don't care.
Yeah. They're just going to find the dogs, run away. Well, do you want to discuss the Mii stuff since we've been talking about it a little bit?
Real quickly, it's interesting that it is integrated at the system level. You know, I mean, in Japan, Nintendo's been experimenting with this a lot more, like with the Friend Collection,
right?
Where you have basically Miis on your DS.
Yeah, and it was a Mii Studio essentially.
Yes, and that is going to be built into 3DS. You can not only make Miis the old-fashioned way, but you can also take pictures of people, and it will basically scan them in and then try to create a Mii based on their photo, and then you can tweak it also to customize.
And then you
after
can put
that.
Them in your favorite first-person shooter.
Right. You can. I hate you.
Of course, it will track the number of steps you've taken, as I predicted.
Yeah. Well, the thing about that though is that again, it's sort of tying into the Street Pass thing. You know, it's kind of encouraging you to take your 3DS with you because, you know, it's gonna give you credit in some way for, you know, as a pedometer.
What if you power up your Pikachu by walking around a lot and so it builds up static?
Yeah, I expect very much that games you play on 3DS will have access to the pedometer information. So basically, yeah, it has a built-in PokeWalker.
Yeah, and I mean, that channel or whatever, the activity log or whatever, it doesn't just measure the steps that would have been taken with a 3DS when you carry it around, but it also like keeps track of, you know, all your game log time and stuff, so it's already kind of interfacing with games in that way.
There,
so I would expect to see the functionality kind of go the other way, where you could accrue in some sort of reward in game for your steps without having to do the whole PokeWalker kind of communication voodoo.
So in terms of 3D video, of course, you know, we didn't hear about Netflix or anything. I mean, I knew that wouldn't be the case because Netflix doesn't exist in Japan. But a lot of people were wondering, are they going to talk about some kind of 3D video store or movie pack-ins, or are we going to sell 3D movies on game cartridges or something like that? And they didn't get into any of that. I think a lot of that stuff is still TBA or TBD, but they did mention that some Japanese TV networks are going to be distributing free videos through the automatic Wi-Fi download stuff that we already talked about, the Spot Pass. And
well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because
is it? I don't know. It's kind of like Nintendo Channel.
Well, it says something about, because here you're not streaming this stuff; you're downloading it.
Yeah, I guess
that's what Spot Pass is. You're downloading info,
which probably tells you the videos are going to be really small.
Well, I mean, the resolution of 3DS is really tiny anyway.
Yes.
You're at 400x240 or 800x240 if you factor in the 3D,
which is still isn't that big.
Yeah, but it's interesting that you're going to have at least, you know, I mean, if we're talking stuff like ghost data, which they've talked about through Spot Pass, or some of these other sort of things, I mean, they could be really trivially small files to download. But if we're talking about any kind of appreciable video content, even at those low resolutions, that is not going to be completely inconsiderable to download those. But Iwata referenced this in the sort of press conference, the presentation, as something that's going to try and get the ball rolling in terms of the 3D video content business on 3DS. And I just wonder, I mean, does that suggest that Spot Pass would be viable for bigger files in the future, or do they have to distribute them another way? I mean, it's certainly a lot of unanswered questions.
Well, if there's one thing Nintendo's known, it's distributing small files and then allowing larger size limits later on.
But
Yeah.
I think in terms of 3D video, we still don't know that much, but I think the really interesting thing is that the system is packed in with a cradle that you can use to recharge it, and it basically sets it up for display so that you can watch video while you recharge the system. Which tells me, because they're packing that in with the system, that tells me Nintendo looks at this as a 3D video viewer in addition to a game device, and they expect a lot of people to be using it for that purpose. So they must have big plans that they still really haven't gotten into.
Well, that's what I was interested by, because it does, I think that will help justify the premium price that it's got in Japan, and is likely to have a pretty high price elsewhere. But this initiative in Japan, at least, seems a bit aspirational rather than solid.
And it may be that they don't have that much 3D video content in Japan. It's starting to spin up quite a bit in the US.
I know. I mean, if anybody has been listening to the relatively new 8-4 Play podcast from Mark McDonald, out there in Japan, they had good old Shane Bettenhausen on there, made things pretty explicit. Like, he had reason to believe that they were going to pack Avatar in with the 3DS in America. Yeah. I don't know how he would know this.
I think it would be brilliant marketing. I mean, I think that would be huge. And because even though a lot of people already own Avatar on DVD or Blu-ray, what they can't do is watch it in 3D. Because, of course, even on Blu-ray, you have to buy a separate version of the Blu-ray that supports 3D, and you have to have a $5,000 3D television. So the idea of packing in a version of Avatar just for 3DS that people can actually see in 3D and having this cradle so it's, you know, you don't have to crane your neck or whatever, I think it's really interesting, and it would certainly get a lot of attention for them. And it would help justify the relatively high price again.
I mean, but that would seem to me to be a very significantly more ambitious kind of signal of intent if they did that in the West than what we're seeing here out of Japan.
Yes.
But I suppose the thing to remember now is that because this event is actually, you know, quite a bit farther out from the launch in Japan than we might have thought, that you know, there's still interminably going to be quite a bit left to be revealed even yet.
Yes, indeed. That was one of the big disappointments for me is, yeah, because it's, you know, not coming out anywhere until late February, they now have 5 months left basically to roll out more and more and more announcements for things like friend codes and, you know, 3D movies and launch titles. And
yeah, well, they probably don't want to distract us too much from whatever crap is coming out this holiday season too.
Right.
Which is, yeah, but because Zelda, you know, I mean, it would have been absolutely pitch perfect window for Zelda to fit into now. But of course they couldn't hit the target on that either. So they are unfortunately left with, you know, a bit of a thin holiday window for poor old DK's broad shoulders. It's still a lot to bear
the
brunt
of. Well, you just have to love the Big Ape that much more.
and on DS, it's particularly bad in the West on DS. In Japan, they're going to be all right because the Pokemon is out.
If there's any opportunity for Kinect and or Move to catch on, I mean, Nintendo's certainly given them the opening.
It is their weakest holiday lineup, I think, since Wii Music.
Kinect, definitely. They've got the marketing push ready. Move, they've pushed that out pretty softly.
Yeah, I think they've already kind of shit out Move and...
But Kinect, they're going to come with guns a-blazing. That will be interesting. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was... One thing I noted was that basically, so the system comes packed in with a 2 gig SD card. Mm-hmm. And that is the internal memory, essentially, but then you could just swap it out for a bigger one. There is no separation anymore between the internal memory and then the SD card slot.
Thank God.
Good.
Everything just runs off the SD card, and, you know, if you want a bigger one, you can have a bigger one.
Well, wait, I assume there's going to be some kind of locking on these things.
Well, you could have it digitally encrypted as a file. I mean, you can copy over.
I'm curious if they're going to have to format them all when you put them in there or what.
You don't have to do that for the Wii. For the Wii, you can copy over your stuff onto another SD card on a PC.
You can have basically mixed partitioning for SD cards on the Wii. You can load it up with a bunch of videos and MP3s and crap from your computer and then go put it in the Wii and start downloading Virtual Console to it.
Hmm.
I've got games from different regions on my SD card.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that to me, I just like this because it streamlines the process. You haven't got this with DSi at the minute. You've still got the fridge cleaning farce and, you know, the whole thing of like, well, do I keep everything on the SD card and just leave enough space on the Wii to stream it, you know, through, you know, you have to keep so many blocks free to stream anything through the SD card. Mm-hmm. Just eliminate all of that.
Yeah.
This is it, and it's expandable.
And SD card is cheaper than internal flash anyway.
Right, yeah, it's a win-win as far as I'm concerned.
And they're just packing it in so you don't have to worry about it. I mean, I don't need another 2 gig SD card, but I would have had to devote one to the 3DS anyway.
No, you don't.
Okay, so let's wrap up the 3DS stuff and talk very quickly about some non-3DS stuff that was at the same conference. They did have a little bit of stuff. Iwata confirmed Wii Remote Plus, which is just a Wii Remote with built-in Motion Plus.
The worst-kept secret ever.
Yeah, and I'm excited. I want one. I want one, but I would like to have one because Motion Plus is an ugly, crappy dongle that changes the center of gravity of the Wii Remote and makes it long and stupid. So, and also hard to use as an NES controller. Mm-hmm. So, I'm very happy to spend a little bit of money and get one of these with Fling Smash or whatever. Rhythm Tengoku Wii.
Sold.
Why?
Why not?
Hey, they ported WarioWare.
It sold really well in Japan on DS. I get it,
but why on Wii? Why is there a console Rhythm Heaven?
Well, I would hope that they would try and justify it in some ways that...
With Waggle. That's what it's going to be. It's going to
have
fucking Waggle.
Well, we don't know Waggle. It's got Waggle. I mean, it could be played sideways.
If it's Waggle, this is a proper timing game.
If you play it NES style, why is it on the Wii?
I don't know. Why was the WarioWare game on GameCube?
Well, I would hope that they would try and bring in some sort of like local multiplayer kind of aspect to it, whether it's some sort of like swapping in and out, or, you know, it's similar to what they've done with the WarioWare. It's just some sort of reason why it's going to be more fun to gather around the same screen with a friend or multiple friends. You know, that would seem to be the only way you could justify it. And yeah, that is a big part of Nintendo's initiative with a lot of their Japanese Wii titles. So it certainly wouldn't surprise me if that was the reason.
I mean, WarioWare Smooth Moves is not the best Wario game, but I probably had the most fun with it when you have 12 people trying to play the game at one time and you're throwing the remote at each other. I mean, it's just utter chaos. And you're oh, sorry, I fumbled the remote. Did I not give it to you fast enough? You lost. I'm sorry. I mean, you can grief. You can watch people just sweat out these terrible, terrible minigames. I mean, I'm actually really excited about this game.
I hope they take advantage of it in that way. You know, I mean, you could easily conceive of Rhythm Heaven minigames where, you know, one person's doing sort of one part and another person's doing another part. I mean, yes, these things would have been plausibly done on a handheld with, you know, wireless or something, but there is always something to be said for gathering around the same screen.
Sure. Yep. Okay. Well, you've justified it to me.
But to be clear, we don't know any of this yet. They haven't told us.
No, I mean, you're speculating.
There is a screenshot of someone, like, you know, classic Rhythm Tengoku, like some guy with a sword slashing at stuff. Like, that's what we've seen.
And isn't there, like, one in an airplane or something? I'm good. I'm sold. I mean, there's a dude in a sword with a sword in an airplane. I'm sold. We're done.
New Kirby game for DS. That's
who's
kind of interesting.
Who's working on that?
Yeah, that is exactly the first thing I thought of. Is it? Because the interesting thing about it is that the screenshot suggests that it's touch control again.
Yeah, they do imply as such.
Everyone is, you know, the action is happening on the lower screen with the map or whatever on the top screen, and there's one that pretty clearly has like a little sort of icon of something being drawn on the screen. And then the other thing about it is you've got like 10 Kirbys or up to 10 Kirbys on screen at once for some reason. So it could be interesting as a sort of eventual successor to Canvas Curse, but again, yes, is it being developed by HAL like Canvas Curse was, or is it being developed by
Muzak or Suzak
is there any other sort of outsourcer du jour?
And like I said, we really know nothing about that game.
I'm looking forward to Kirby Epic Yarn. I don't know about you guys.
Oh yes.
I'm sorry. Yep. My enthusiasm was far, far higher for that game
You'll also get it probably a year sooner. So,
and of course, we heard nothing about Cosmic Walker again.
It's been 2 years.
It's time to move on, Johnny.
Don't say it. Okay. Speaking of moving on, listener mail.
Okay, Jet Pilot writes. With the 130 million install base of the DS, Nintendo has once again become the arrogant company in thinking that customers will purchase the DS at any price simply because it is a Nintendo product. Does Nintendo really think that parents are going to give their children $300 toys? They give them cell phones. Oh, I'm sorry. I have two young boys myself, and there's no way I would buy them a $300 gadget. It's simply too much money for a gift for a child, especially one that could wind up broken, lost, or stolen. That's exactly what happened with the PS3. Gamers said no thanks to Sony and just kept on playing their PS2s until the PS3 got a significant price drop. Actually, they also probably played their 360s.
Yeah. or bought 360s and played them.
I can see this same scenario play out with 3DS. The devoted fan base will line up to purchase the new hardware, just like they did with the PlayStation 3. However, when that market is quickly exhausted, Nintendo will see sales drop off quickly because $300 is simply too expensive for a mass market toy. While the DS had a big market share of the older folks such as you and I, a large portion of the DS user base are minors that rely on others to gift them new games and hardware.
Can I make a point real quick before we get into the minutiae of this? If your 5-year-old can't be trusted to buy a $300 handheld system for them, they just need to go out and get a job. I think that's what it comes down to.
You will want to work more to purchase the...
That's right.
Yes.
Sony quotes, the gifts that keep on giving.
You will want to get a second job.
So first off, as we mentioned before, it's not $300. It's 25,000 yen.
In the West, we don't know what it's going to cost. I would say that a $300 launch price in the US is very unlikely. Yeah. Not impossible, but very unlikely. It will probably be $250. Nevertheless, that is still $100 more than the DS launched for. It is certainly a more premium product. It has a lot more features, and it's much more cutting edge, especially with that screen, and it's more expensive. That means that less people are going to be able to afford it right off the bat. I mean, you have to keep in mind that the DS was basically positioned as Nintendo's kind of quick, we got to get something out there to succeed the GBA. And it was basically a stopgap that ended up going for a lot longer than they originally planned. So it was meant to compete with PSP, sort of preempt the PSP, which had already been announced and was a serious competitor. You know, I mean, I think Nintendo took Sony very seriously up front about the PSP being a competitive device. And certainly it's by far, PSP is the most successful handheld rival for Nintendo ever, by a factor of 10, okay? So Nintendo was right, and they, you know, the DS ended up being kind of a surprise smash success. But DS was launched at 150 is because it was cheap hardware. They had to get something out there. They're in a completely different place right now, which Jet Pilot refers to. They're basically saying they're on top now. They're massively, you know, dominant in the handheld space, and basically they've sold so many, you know, over 100 million DSs, they think we can kind of do whatever we want with 3DS. I don't think that's the case. For one thing, relatively speaking, this is not a $600 console, which is what Sony did with PS3. It's just in a totally different world. I mean, obviously it's, you know, less than half the price, but also it's just not, it's not that significant of an increase over the previous generation. But I think also in Japan, where it is kind of $300, it's 25,000 yen in Japan, that's expensive, but Japan is more used to spending more on electronics. And also I think you have to realize that for a lot of people in Japan, the 3DS is basically their new console. They're not buying this in addition to a PlayStation 3 or a Wii. For a lot of people, this will probably be the only video game system they buy for the next 5 years.
We've seen it in Japan already to some extent in terms of, first of all, I mean, the most recent DS launches, you know, something like the XL or whatever, those have not come out at exchange rate parity. You know, they've essentially been less expensive in America most recently. Like the they've matched it, you know, 19,000 equals $190 for the big model, for instance. And second of all, I mean, just look at software in Japan. You know, if you've got a really big game, something like DQ9, they're prepared to make that the cost of a console game. And people have bought it in their millions. You know, I mean, it's a different perception of what portable gaming is worth in Japan than there is in America. And, you know, as much as Nintendo might like to claw back some of those currency losses in America, they have to deal with the market reality, which is completely different from Japan. So I really don't think they'll be arrogant in America because they know they're dealing with a very different environment. The only thing I would say is perhaps there is some possibility that they might start to take Japan for granted a bit because it is so, because the DS is so enormous there, because portable gaming is so enormous there.
Right.
Perhaps there might continue to be some room for Sony to kind of make inroads there.
There is, but that would require Sony to recognize that price and power aren't everything, which is what they recognized for the original PlayStation.
Right.
But since then, they really haven't. They've always been bigger, better.
The PS2 wasn't the most powerful system either. I mean,
well,
yeah, they were driving their DVD.
It had a lot of crazy custom processing.
Yeah.
And yeah. It
yeah,
was...
but that's because they can't design hardware.
I think there is an opportunity here for Sony with PSP 2 to position it as either this is less expensive than the 3DS or it's the same price but it does more, mm-hmm. which is probably the latter is probably more likely there. But, you know, PSP is a lot more competitive in Japan than it is in the West. And so Sony's starting from a stronger place in terms of competing with Nintendo. I don't know that the PSP itself can compete with 3DS. In fact, I don't think it can at all. But I do think they may have an opportunity. I'm not saying PSP2 has a real chance of outselling 3DS or anything, but if they want to take a larger chunk of the market share than they already have, this might be a way for them to do it because 3DS is going to be fairly expensive in Japan. And, you know, Sony is kind of already at a point where they should be, and I'm sure they are, figuring out what they're going to do with the next handheld.
Right.
And, you know, especially with the delay for 3DS, it means they might have a chance. I don't know that they can get PSP2 out before 3DS, but certainly they might be able to release it not too long after that. And if they can convince people to wait for that, then, you know, they might be able to make a serious dent here.
They would have to start their PR campaign, like, right now, though. And there's no indication that they're ready to.
I disagree. Especially in Japan, things generally aren't... Video games are not promoted until a couple of months before they come out. They don't have this really long, obsessive media cycle that we do in
the West. If we were to infer anything from Nintendo, we would have to assume that to be true.
That's right. Hey, guys, we have a game called Excitebots. It's out right now.
Worked real well for Sega.
But, I mean, I think one of the interesting things about these letters and raises is the issue of children, you know, gifts for children, all that. I think Nintendo is going to be fairly sanguine that end of the market will continue to be catered to by the existing DS systems. We saw the GBA limp on in this capacity for quite some time.
Even when they tried put it down.
Yeah,
in America especially, and you could tell that it was very clearly for the purpose of being gifted to younger children, because the games that kept coming out for it were licensed kids' television games.
Made by THQ almost exclusively.
Nintendo will be quite happy to serve that end of the market with the DS and the DSi as they sort of ride off into the sunset, and serve a different end of the market with the 3DS, and then at some point, you know, maybe with a price drop or changing economic conditions, those two will kind of maybe converge a bit down the line.
Well, I have to think that the 3D screen technology is one of the higher cost drivers, and as that technology gets adopted into more and more mobile devices, I suspect that the cost of production will go down a lot, and then they can probably afford a lower price point.
Yes. James, I think you were next.
Travis writes, I'm a fan of the show, despite not owning a DS or Wii. I especially tune in for the retrospectives and discussions about virtual console games.
First off, you should listen to Radio Trivia Podcast Edition if you like old games.
There you go. We're going to get the plugs in early.
That's true.
With the upcoming end of the Retronauts podcast, I think you guys will be my only podcast for such information. On to the questions. I am cheap and on a budget, so I have been playing a GameCube given to me by my brother a couple years ago, and an original GBA I bought from my friend for $10.
Original GBA?
Hey, I still have my original GBA.
The dream lives.
I'm sure you can get an SP for like $20, and it's a huge upgrade.
Especially the latter-day SPs with the really nice screens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
those are nice.
I have picked up quite a few of the big titles for these systems, thanks in part to advice I received from listening to your podcast. Nice. I'm now looking into getting Animal Crossing for the GameCube, but I am wondering if I should buy it used or track down a new copy. Do you know if the content included on the memory card is worth paying the extra cash? Can I get that content without the included memory card?
I don't recall there being any content included on the memory card.
That's what I was thinking.
The first thing it does is it formats that memory card. So, no. There's no content.
So, buy a free disk, you know, out of a bin somewhere.
And a memory
card. Buy a free disk. Okay, yes.
No, I mean a loose disk.
Like free as a bird, not like free as a cost.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
But a memory card, because like I said, the first thing it does is it formats that memory card. And not the 51. It's got to be the 251. because it's bigger.
Really?
I think it's actually...
I thought it was the small one.
I think
one.
It's a 59, but I think it uses up the entire card.
It does.
Isn't that why they included one with the game?
Yes. Yeah. I thought it was more than 59. I thought it was bigger.
No, I don't think
no,
so.
No, I think it's a 59, but it uses the entire thing. So if you buy it without the card, just make sure you have a card that you can use just for Animal Crossing. I guess
yeah, because like I said, I think regardless of the side of the card, the first thing it does is it goes...
Oh,
it formats it.
Brilliant design.
Look, yeah. if that is true, and I only say that because I remember it formatted mine when I plugged it in, but it was the official card. Would that surprise you at all, really?
No.
But if it was a new card, which it would be when it's packed in, then it has to be formatted, right? So
I don't recall having to format cards when I got them new.
I think you do on GameCube. Long time since I had to do it.
Yeah, it's kind of quaint, isn't it? memory card.
I would say that you can probably get both of those two purchases pretty darn cheap on eBay right now.
Oh, sure.
You could also get a GBA link cable to do the island stuff.
Yes.
It's kind of like the city in the City Fog.
And and you get these peculiar readings from... What was that character's name?
I don't know. I've blocked out most of my memories of Animal Crossing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have a confession. I've never played Animal Crossing.
How in the hell have you never played Animal Crossing?
I took a gamble on Animal Crossing and really disliked it.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I can accept, you know, just disliking it, but just having never played it.
Honestly, there have been times where I had the opportunity to play it, and I avoided it because I knew people who had become so addicted that they were dysfunctional. It's kind of like MMOs. I would probably like it if I tried it, but I'm scared. You know, like it's probably better for my career and my personal life if I don't even go there.
Cap'n.
The only nice story is I think Adam Contras and his wife were into Animal Crossing on the GameCube, and they would go around like posting things on each other's boards in the game because, you know, each person has their own house. And so I think one time... Adam went into his wife's house and changed like the wallpaper or something and made it all like boobs.
Nice.
So that sort of stuff I could see as being fun if you have someone else you're playing with.
And that was the whole concept of Animal Crossing is that they wanted the entire family to play it on the same system.
Yeah, you can grief on those games pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I was playing it and my sister was on there too. She just left crap everywhere. And I was like obsessively cleaning the island because everybody moves away when one weed pops up. It's like, oh, there's a weed. Time to leave. It's like, you could pluck it yourself, you damn frog.
Okay. Greg, can you take the next letter, please?
Sam writes, I still have the original launch NDS, and I've held off on upgrading, being that mine still plays everything. However, my brother didn't have the same idea and picked up the Lite, which he traded for credit when buying his DSi. I really like the DSi store games, like Dark Void Zero,
no!
But I'm reluctant to upgrade to the XL or regular DSi because of the 3DS's slated release. Should I wait for the 3DS or upgrade now? I love the show. Keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, since I'm the only person here who made the jump straight to the I, I think maybe I am. I'm
straight to the XL. You mean?
Well, yeah.
You went from fat to really fat.
I went from big to big dog in one jump. It is really nice. I mean, I'll be honest. When I first got the XL, my first thought was, I can't play on this. This screen is just too big and too bright. And
no, you can't go back.
I can't even go to DSIs. I mean, when I was at E3 and a company had a DSI set up instead of an XL, I wanted to turn around and be like, what's wrong with you people? What is your problem? Can't you get an XL?
Your 3DS does not have as large a screen. You're going to have trouble there.
It doesn't. I know. And I talked about that. It's going to be an issue. I believe that when I go get the XL, it's going to feel weird.
Well, it will, because you have a 3D FX turned on.
Well, yeah, but I mean, right now, the screen's gigantic. But what I would say is the following. Let's assume as the baseline, like the highest price point considerable, that the DS 3DS is $300 in the US, which we all agree it probably won't be. But let's just say that's the case.
Certainly that's the maximum that it could possibly
be. That is the ceiling. If Sam would be comfortable paying that out of the gate, then do not upgrade. If $250 he's probably comfortable, I would say hold off. If you would buy a 3DS at $250.
Yeah, because 3DS will do everything that you would be able to do on the XL or the DSi.
Right. Setting that baseline, if you would still buy it at $300, there's no reason for you to go out and buy a DSi.
Yeah, I guess the point is, if you were, if you were hesitant, if you didn't think the 3DS was worth it at the price it's going to come out, maybe you might upgrade to a DSi instead and then wait for 3DS. Right. But
if your ceiling is $200, then go ahead and buy the DSi.
But of course, even after the price cuts, the DSi in itself is not an inconsiderable sort of expense.
No, it's not.
And especially when we consider that you're paying the premium basically just for DSiWare, because as you said, he's got the fat DS, it does right. Everything. I mean, you pay for DSiWare on the better screens, aren't you?
Yeah,
you are.
Another consideration, if you're talking about trading in the system, I still play GBA games on my DS Lite, and I mean, it's so much more playable to play GBA games on a DS Lite than a DS Fat. So if you do that, that's another consideration. I know you're interested in DSiWare, and that's what this question's about. But if you are considering trading in a system, and that system may be your only way of playing GBA games, I don't know. That's something to consider,
then
too.
Then maybe just go for a Lite, which would be really cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 130. A DS Lite is still 130 new, which is kind of crazy. But you could buy a used DS Lite for well under $100, and that would be a cheap upgrade for you. Now you'd get the better screens, you'd still have GBA support, and then you could wait until 3DS comes out
and as we know now, you will be able to get those DSiWare games
most
that you like on the new shop as well.
Right. Now the DS Lite screens aren't the same as the screens in the eye. They're smaller, and I don't think they're quite as bright, but they are still a big upgrade.
They're plenty bright.
The eye screens could kill a man. The XL screens probably have.
Yeah, if you're ever like broken down in the middle of nowhere in your car and you need a flashlight to fix the engine.
I have used the XL as a flashlight multiple times. Yes. In fact, I did it at E3 when I was trying to walk around without turning on any lights.
You could put it on a record player and make a lighthouse. If you could find a record player.
Yeah, you'd have a better chance finding a 3DS in the wild than a record player.
All right. Thanks for the questions, everybody. The address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we really, really enjoy reading your emails. We try to read as many as we can when we're not burdened by hour-long discussions on 3DS news. So, the retroactive results are in. We had by far the most votes we've ever had in one of these polls, and it was about, I'd say, about 50% larger than the previous record. And the winner is Yoshi's Story.
Yay! Oh.
I have mixed feelings on it. I've never
played
the game.
What are we going to say about Yoshi's Story?
Well, I don't know. That
you collect fruit.
That remains to be seen. It is a somewhat controversial game. Some people think it sucks. Some people think it's been kind of overlooked. Some people think it's kind of a hidden gem that more people need to play. So in that respect, I think it's going to be good because we can sort of analyze that. Mm-hmm. In terms of the actual game mechanics, I don't know if there's much to say about it, but we'll say in 2 weeks, so on episode 215, we will have our discussion of Yoshi's Story. And in the meantime, you can play along at home. There is already an official forum thread for discussing the game. And post your thoughts in there, and we'll start pulling posts out of there to read on the show and sort of direct and supplement our discussion. I'm looking forward to it because it's my first time. And by the way, the second place was a tie between Ogre Battle 64 and Perfect Dark. So
I think that's a surprise.
I actually expected one of those to maybe win, with Yoshi's Story maybe coming in third. Anyway, both Ogre Battle and Perfect Dark will return in our second chance poll, which is coming out pretty soon, I think. So both of those games will have another chance of being selected, but they'll have to compete with some other runners-up from previous polls. So we'll see how it goes, but thank you very much to everybody who voted. I was really excited at the turnout that we got. And it's time for some pimping. Mike, you want to start it off?
Sure thing. So for those of you who are unaware, I host well, you probably should be aware. I mentioned it a little while ago. I am the host of Radio Trivia Podcast Edition, which if you like RFN, you'll probably like this latest episode, which I recorded just a few days ago with Jonathan Metz over here.
Yes, I probably sound really tired on it. It was my third podcast in 3 days.
Check that out. It's a lot of fun. We play video game music from recent and older games, and then we talk about those games. So if you're a fan of the retroactive segments, or you probably will really like this podcast. So please check it out.
It is a lot of fun.
And you can find it, of course, on NintendoWorldReport.com and in iTunes.
And speaking of radio trivia...
Oh, dear.
That wasn't forced at all.
So we will be doing... Carly and I will be doing our second live radio trivia. While we don't think this is a regular event, it just happens to be that we have done two of them as of the 8th of October, which is a Friday. We are doing it at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, simply because the 9 p.m. Eastern is 2 a.m. Carly's time, which is late enough.
When we started tonight.
Yes. which when you're managing, which when you're doing things like managing scores and stuff, doesn't tend to go particularly great, and it's very tiring. And doing the show itself is kind of tiring. We haven't hammered out what our prizes are yet, but there should be an article on the site by the time this goes up, detailing what they are.
There you go. So if you missed it the first time, you have a second chance at live radio trivia. It is really, really a fun time and a special event, really. I mean, no one else on the internet does anything like that, as far as I know. So I've got a podcast to pimp as well. I just started a new project over at Crosstalk called Discover Music Project. And it's a music podcast where I have a co-host and we basically do an entire episode about one band or at least one kind of music and sort of introduce it to everybody else. And hopefully the idea is that it's sort of something that you've probably heard of, but maybe you don't know very much about, or at least most people don't. And it's kind of just an introduction to something that you might not have listened to otherwise. The first episode is one of my favorite bands, one of my hippie music bands, Phish.
Yeah, damn hippies.
Should have guessed.
And I had a lot of fun doing it. My co-host for that episode is Mike Sklens, who, of course, co-founded Radio Free Nintendo. And Mike is going, we're going to flip it the next time, and Mike is going to play his favorite band, Less Than Jake, for me. And I don't know much about them at all. So that's kind of how it's going to go. We're going to go back and forth, probably rotate in co-hosts, and hopefully get a really eclectic selection of music. And we'll all learn about some new music that we wouldn't have heard otherwise. So I'm really excited about it. It was also my first time editing a podcast, which is pretty intimidating, I have to say. And I don't envy Greg's job this weekend with this monstrous show that we've done. All right, I think we pimped everything. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next week.
Well, I don't know what Greg does for you, Johnny, but I find that, I don't know if it's your speaking style or that you lean away from the mic or whatever, but you're loud and you get really soft.
Yep, they said that happens.
That's just
I agree.
I mean, I wear a headset, so it must just be the dynamic nature.
Yeah, it's natural. Yeah, and I've said many times, the problem with that is that it's contagious.
Yes, people talk down to you.
Once the softly talk starts, everyone's at it, and then I have to amplify everyone. I'm just as guilty as everyone else, as myself.
Well, that's what normalization fixes a little bit of.
Nah. It fixes a little bit, but it's not all the way there in my experience. I deploy selective amplification, which is very time-consuming.
Yes.
But it's better for it.
You and me, Greg, we have the heart and soul for it.
Okay, well, anyway, let's clap. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1... Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo.
Son of a bitch.
I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me this week are Greg Lay.
We're not going to use that, are we?
why not? I think we should. I think it's perfect.
Why not?
You do have the explanation of it being low. already on the audio.
Talk about inside baseball. This is inside Peter Gammon's larynx.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of like when I put in Kirby Tilt and Tumble in my SP and it was not happy.
Or in your Game Boy Player.
Oh, especially if you put in your Game Boy
That's
Player.
That's why they put the handle on the GameCube, you know. Yeah.
Tilt and Tumble was not a good design decision. I thought, what if we ever put the slot down there?
Also wasn't a good design decision because it was for Game Boy Color, and once you tilted the screen away from you,
it's all over.
It became a shiny blotch.
Kirby Invisible Adventure.
I found that game physically unplayable, even on the system it was intended for. So,
well, if you tilt yourself with it, you're okay.
Okay, I finished that.
good.
But
can you resend me the chat real quick?
Oh, you lost.
Oh that. Yeah. Hang on.
Skype went away, like John.
Oh wow, daddy issues.
Tyler's not here. Tyler went away. What?
All right. Also, Greg, I leave this last one to you. I don't know what you were going for in these notes, but...
That was just a joke for the notes.
I mean, oh, okay.
The point is, I had all these bits where I had the facts, and then I had some potential discussion points.
Okay.
And I couldn't really think of any discussion points for this, so I just typed out a bunch of Pokemon names.
Okay, so what we're talking about here is that there's a Pokemon Teaches Typing game coming out, basically. It's Battle and Get! Pokemon Typing DS!
For the DS, and it comes with a fucking keyboard for your DS.
Obviously, because you can't touch type.
Why isn't this coming out for the Wii, at least? I mean, there's a keyboard. Kind of makes sense.
Because this is the highest percentage of comedy they could have done.
And apparently it's wireless. Apparently it's a wireless keyboard for the DS.
Yes, so you can use it with DSi.
So it's like an 11B wireless keyboard, not even Bluetooth, because DS doesn't support Bluetooth.
I can't wait to see it, because there is a really good chance that the thing is just going to be emblazoned with Pokemon making the shape of every letter.
Yeah, it'll be bright yellow. Bright yellow keyboard.
Oh, God.
That can only be used... for this one DS game.
Yes.
For this one DS game at the end of the DS lifespan. I almost want to import it just because it's just amazing.
We don't know much about the gameplay, but we can only hope that it involves you typing gibberish Pokemon names as fast as possible.
Because you need to know that in later
That's
life.
Right. That's a good way to learn typing, is to type gibberish.
I can type 120 Metapods a minute.
What is this? Regigigas? Is that a...
Regigigas, I think it is.
Yes, it is a Pokemon.
Feraligatr? Oh my gosh. This is like blue French fries. I mean,
Feraligatr is missing a vowel because, of course, Pokemon names can only be 10 characters long.
Yes.
Learn to type names that aren't fully realized.
I can't wait.